South Texas Gardening with Bob Webster is on the air. Talk to Bob now. 210-599-5555.
All right. Well, a very good morning across this part of the country, Hill Country, San Antonio, South Texas, and wherever you happen to be listening on the internet. At least in our part of the world, looks like we've got a fairly good chance of rain later today. And boy, that's welcome. I mean, we've had enough rain to keep the grass green, but boy, the trees, the aquifers, the rivers, the lakes, we really need a good, thorough soaking rain. Maybe this will be the weekend that we get it. Maybe not. I know it will be a good weekend for gardening, at least until rain sets in. And so many things to talk about, so many different things you need to be doing out there. But most important is what is of interest to you. Don and Clint are my first two callers. That means we have a couple of open lines. Grab one if you like. Get in early before things get really busy and it gets hard to get through. You just heard the number, 210-599-5555. And I say good morning, Don. Are you there, Don?
I'll put him back on hold.
Okay. We know Clint's there and ready to talk. Good morning, Clint.
Oh, I'm here and ready.
How are you doing this Saturday morning?
Oh, still trying to wake up. Coffee hadn't kicked in yet.
That's what I always say about radio. Nice thing is we only have to sound awake. We don't have to look awake.
Look awake. Good, yeah. Yeah, right now we got a whole bunch of those little thick, furry, little finger-sized caterpillars. Are those good guys or bad guys?
Every caterpillar eats vegetation. They are not, they don't make an especially pretty butterfly or anything, so they don't have a lot of redeeming qualities. I guess they're good food for the chickens and the birds and things like that, but I wouldn't categorize them as the worst pest out there, but they're not your friend either.
Oh, they sure love my comfrey.
Well, there you go. That alone is reason enough for them to go live somewhere else.
Yeah, well, when they get around that, they all get squished. But everything, if they leave everything else alone, I kind of ignore them.
I tell you, I have never seen the assortment of caterpillars that are out there. And you can say fuzzy caterpillars, but I'm seeing about six different kinds of fuzzy caterpillars, along with the usual loopers and everything else. So I guess it means it's going to be a good year for butterflies, but it sure is a good year for caterpillars. And they sure are eating a lot in people's flower beds and gardens and everywhere else. The little worms that get up on the oak trees are actually getting a pretty good start too. So they're a lot of bad guys out there along with the good guys.
Now I'm guessing that means it's going to be a good bumper crop of grasshoppers again.
I have no idea. I have only seen a handful so far. But it remains to be seen. These things all seem to be cyclical. And some years when we have lots of caterpillars, we don't have many grasshoppers. I'm certainly hoping that's going to be this will be one of them. But there's absolutely no way to tell. Like I say, many times if we're going to have a bad grasshopper crop, we're already seeing lots of just little bitty grasshoppers out there. And I'm seeing only a handful. I'm not seeing any great number at all of grasshoppers so far, and I certainly view that as a good thing.
Any luck on finding someone to do the no-low replacement?
They're still trying, and very few people seem to think they have the technology to do that. I'm still hoping the company that took over the nematode production, they obviously have the science down, but haven't gotten, they're working as hard as they can just to keep up with the nematodes is what they tell me, but when they have any more time, they will work on it, and so I honestly don't know where to turn. It was an older couple, I think, that had been making it all these years, and just decided they couldn't work that hard anymore, so the grasshoppers are fortunate. One of these days we'll get somebody putting out that Nosema locustri, and that's always been the best bait we ever had for them.
What part of the country were they making the Nolo at?
You know, I don't know. I think it was somewhere in California, but I'm not absolutely certain of that.
They would farm it out to somebody and just kind of QC it or something or another.
It seems to me that it would be a very lucrative market because grasshoppers do, you know, a tremendous amount of economic damage, and they weren't giving it away to begin with. But there's a good opportunity out there for somebody, but there just don't seem to be as many hardworking people as there once were. And we better not go down that road. We'll get into trouble. We'll leave that to Trey and Jack and the other ones that bring up some subjects regularly.
Oh, definitely. What about there was a caller or someone a few months back, or you had mentioned that Sandy from Sandy Oaks has somehow came up with a good cut ant recipe. Did anybody ever try to get with family to see what that was about?
You know, I've got to get hold of Bruce Dooley. If anyone would know that, Bruce would, and I know he's still out there. In fact, you can sure drop him an email if you want. I think it's still natureapproved.com. is where he is, and but no, I think that's one of the secrets Sandy took to the grave with her, and have not been able to find anybody else who knew. But I bet you Bruce does, and Bruce calls periodically. I haven't heard from him in a month or two, but I'll do my best to remember to ask him. But you go ahead and drop him a line if you like. I'm sure he'd be happy to hear from you.
Seemed like the last time I tried that. No luck. Seemed like it wasn't working.
Well, the cut ants, I have heard 100 different, you know, things to do to control them. And it seems like something will work for one person and then won't work for the next. So it may be that, you know, they're slightly different strains. It may be other environmental issues that we don't fully understand, but, I've had people that had 100% success with sulfur and other people that had none. I've had people that simply flooded the mounds and said that got them every time. I've had people that added spinosad when they flooded the mound, and they thought that worked even better than anything else had done. So I wish we had, I guess if we had one answer that worked for everybody, we'd get it on the market and it'd be a good product. But maybe it's different soil types. Maybe it's, who knows what the difference is from one location to another, but what works perfectly for, you know, one person doesn't seem to touch them in the next. So just all I can say is keep trying and keep notes. So once you find the thing that really works, you won't be scratching your head and saying, now what was it that I did? That's my problem. Something will start growing really, really well. And I'm thinking back now, what did I do differently on this plant because it's doing so much better than the others?
No, I was talking about Bruce Dooley's website and email address.
As far as I know, it's still natureapproved.com. And that would probably be Bruce at natureapproved.com. But if you go to natureapproved.com, I think you'll find that's his main website. Hey, he should have his email and other things on there.
Maybe I mistyped it, but the last time I tried it, that wasn't working.
Well, I'll try it at one of my commercial breaks here and let you know how it works for me.
Okie doke. And lastly, on the compost, I went pretty heavy on my grass and on my trees. Can you go too thick?
If you're talking about your coastal, I don't think so. St. Augustine, you could bury it so deeply that it shut out the light. I wouldn't really recommend over about a half an inch thick, but Bermuda, no, it's going to come right up through it of all sorts. And in the vegetable garden and other places, no, just don't get it right up against the stems of your plants. But if a little compost is good, in most cases, a lot of compost is better.
Yeah, I think I made a little bit too much on my St. Augustine, but on my fruit trees, it probably went up about 3 inches.
Yeah. Well, that's a good thing. And on your St. Augustine, just if you can, thin it out a little bit. You just want to be getting some sunlight down to those blades of grass so the photosynthesis can take place. And once they're insured of getting enough light, they'll love that much. That's not a problem.
Good deal. And what was the name of the... completely alfalfa-based fertilizer?
It is one of the products from Nature's Creation. Now, they make two different products. They make one that's manure-based and one that's alfalfa-based. I believe the alfalfa-based is called their Premium Lawn and Garden Food.
Premium Lawn and Garden. And y'all carry that there?
We don't. We like, you know, the one that Medina makes for us. And just there's not room for everything out there. Got 24 pallets of Medina in this week. And we probably, if we can figure out where to store it, we'll start carrying a little bit more of it because it's a good product. But we're not like Fanix. We don't have 10 acres of ground. I envy those guys because they got room to store anything they want to.
Ooh, I hate to see that tax bill.
Well, they're, yeah, I don't know whether the county's found them or not. I hate to see land prices. We could buy the lot next door, but it's $2.8 million, and you just don't make that much money in the nursery business. But I'm looking forward personally to having a little chat with the tax bill this month or this year on property tax, because since we put all of our property under conservation easement, it's going to be worth, according to the appraisal, about a fifth of what it was before, and they can't very well argue with a certified appraiser. So that's going to be a pleasant experience, telling them that just like they could raise ours by 80% in 1 year, we can reduce ours by 80% in 1 year. But don't get me started talking about local taxing organizations.
Well, Bexar County absolutely lost their mind yet again.
Yes, absolutely. But as long as you and I semi-keep ours, what's that Willie Nelson line? I may be crazy, but it keeps me from going insane.
Oh, yeah. Well, I sure appreciate your time.
Well, it's always a pleasure hearing from you. You get out and have a wonderful weekend. Looks like we've got Don back and then Kathy and Wayne. Good morning, Don.
Morning, Bob.
Good morning.
Hey,
good morning, sir.
Down here, Cupcake. I stopped harvesting my asparagus a couple of weeks ago, and it's up to 2.5-3 foot tall now. So,
yes, sir.
What should I fertilize that with?
Medina? If you want to use probably the single fastest acting and best, it'd be one of the good liquids like Has to Grow Plant or the Medina Liquid Fish Blend. If you want to use one of the dry granular products, it could be Medina, Maestro Grow, Nature's Creation. Any of those make good fertilizers, and they will work well. They're just not as readily available. Right now you kind of want to kickstart your asparagus and get those little ferns up and absorbing all the sun's energy they can before it gets too hot. So I'd just be using, like I say, either the Medina Has to Grow or, the Medina Liquid Fish Blend to be my two first choices.
Yeah. The other day I talked to you about the nut grass and you told me to put molasses on there, and I forgot, where you said 1.5 cup or a cup per gallon of water?
About 1/2 cup per gallon of water.
Okay, that's right. Yes, I said, well, I better wait and talk to Bob, because when you get over like a year and goes in 1 year, if you don't write it down, you think, was it this or was it that, you know? So,
what were we just talking about?
Yeah,
I know exactly what you're talking about, Don. I commit a lot more things to paper than I do to memory these days.
Right. My tomato plant's up about 4.5-5 foot tall, and they produce real good early, but it seems like now that the blooms are little and they're not staying on, and I haven't been a couple of weeks since I put any of that garret juice on it, so...
I'd do that again, and I'd probably hit them with a little Has to Grow Plant as well.
Right. Okay. Because the blooms were big, healthy, and now that little bit of thing, they fall off. It's like, strange, but.
Well, the temperatures have cooled back down, and we're supposed to have a couple of really cool days, and those tomatoes are not quite like okra, but they still like the heat. So as it warms up, you just want to be sure they have the nutrition they need to produce well. So I think you get back to pretty good production pretty shortly.
Yes. Okay, sir. I guess that's about it. I can say everything. I started harvesting squash. I got 4 or 5 yesterday. So the worms, get in into them, I'm all right. Those kind of worms, what can you do about those things? The way they bore into you, and once they bore through, that's it. They're not going to produce anymore.
Well, that little caterpillar gets inside the vine. I use just, some people would use a turkey baster. I'm comfortable with syringes. I just use a syringe and inject that BT. I'll just stick it, you know, down the yellow squash. The stems are pretty much hollow, and I'll just squirt a whole bunch of that into the stem, and that seems to stop them completely. The zucchinis have a little bit tougher stem, and it's not as open, so I'll sometimes inject three or four spots up and down that stem in the first foot or 18 inches, and that gets those vine borers and, you know, just stops them completely. The other thing I think is always a good idea is plant a little bit of what they call tatumi squash, also called calabacita. That has such a thin stem, the vine borers can't get into it. And it's kind of like a little rounder zucchini. It's a very good squash. But the vine borers don't get after it. Your tatumi should keep producing all summer for you.
Yeah. Once they get through and eat that center out, the plants stay pretty, but they just don't produce any fruit.
Well, the plants just kind of wilt and die. So, yeah, the vine borers are a real issue. But like I say, I just inject the stems with some BT, and that seems to get them under control pretty well.
Okay, Bob. Yay, happy garden.
And same to you, John. Thank you. Kathy's next in line. Good morning, Kathy.
Good morning, Bob. what you were just speaking with the gentleman, you were talking about, I believe you said you inject the stems of zucchini every three or four spots.
Yeah, zucchini's a little bit more solid stem than the yellow, either crook neck or straight neck. The yellow's real easy. You can just take your little syringe and squirt several cc's up into there, and that stops the vine borers completely. The zucchini have a little bit more solid stem, so it's a little bit harder to get it in there. But I'll start about 3 inches out from or up from the ground, and I'll just, you know, try to put half a cc or something in there about, you know, every couple of inches, and that seems to stop them completely.
Okay, thank you. Okay, very good. And then the other things I wanted to ask you about is several years ago I spoke to you about maybe making a fence out of using. You told me to use Confederate jasmine. I'm trying to hide my neighbor's trash cans
out my
living room window. And so I was wondering, how far apart should I plant them?
If you're starting with 1 gallon containers, you can put them 3 feet apart, and they would fill in very quickly. Doesn't take a lot of plants.
Okay, very good. Okay, and those will grow in, like, partial shade also?
Yes, they'll do well in partial shade. If it's real shady, they grow, but they just don't bloom as well. But if it's partial shade, you get foliage and lots of beautiful, fragrant white flowers.
Okay, very good. Okay. Then I wanted to ask you, I have a raised bed in the back, but I haven't had the opportunity to plant anything yet. And so I was wondering, is it still okay to plant even cucumbers and zucchini?
Oh, yeah. Fine to plant cucumbers and zucchini. On tomatoes, I would focus on the smaller fruited varieties, what we call cherry tomatoes. Still time to plant all the peppers. Still time to plant bush beans, black-eyed peas. It's just barely time to plant okra now. So there are a lot of things you could be putting in the vegetable garden.
Okay. And now for peppers, I like bell peppers, like a red bell, red bell pepper or yellow bell pepper.
Right.
But I haven't seen any, when I've looked in the different places to purchase them, I haven't seen any of those. All I see mostly are the jalapeno. So do you recommend starting them from seeds then, or what?
You can start them from seed, but you're a little late on that. I would just call around. I'm not sure what's out there today here at our nursery, but you know, a month ago, we had plenty of red bells and yellow bells both. You might call Fanix if anybody has them. I think Fanix has like 20 different varieties, peppers or something like that. Or call back here after 9 o'clock and somebody will run out and take a look and see if we've got the red bells right now. But we sure have had plenty of them earlier in the spring.
Okay, thank you. And then since I really haven't planted anything yet, I need to finish taking the weeds out because a lot of stuff is grown in there.
Yes, I understand.
What should I put down to really prepare my soil well for these plants?
Just some good granular fertilizer. Medina has 7 Medina's Growing Green, or Texas Tea from Maestro Grow, or Premium Lawn and Garden Food from Nature's Creation. Those are all excellent products to put down. Put down that and a little bit of compost, and you should be able to grow a world of different things in that garden.
Okay. And then my last question is, I started eating spaghetti squash about 2 years ago, maybe. Mm-hmm. And I remember at that time, after when I would pull it out of the oven, just had a little taste of it, and it had a little bit of sweetness to it.
Uh-huh.
Not a lot, but just a little bit. But I know that the squash that I've purchased in the last half year has zero sweetness to it.
Probably they're grown with nothing but chemical fertilizers. Spaghetti squash is easy to grow. Now, it takes much longer to produce. From the time you set out your little zucchini plant until you have fruit is probably, 30 days or less. With spaghetti squash, it's going to be more like 90 days for it to start producing. That's why we try to plant it early, because it's just a much longer time before you get it. But you can grow spaghetti squash, grows very easily, and it has a thin enough stem that the vine borers aren't usually a problem with it. So it's just one of those many things that what comes out of your garden is going to taste a whole lot better than what comes from the grocery store. You might try somewhere like natural grocers may have some more organic spaghetti squash. It's going to have a better flavor to it, but they certainly don't have the selection that the bigger stores do.
Right. Okay. And is there, you said natural grocers, do you mean like Sprouts or something like that, or did you mean a specific store?
There are two stores that are actually called natural grocers here in San Antonio. One of them's on New Braunfels, right around the corner from Dr. Kirby's clinic. I usually go both places at the same time. And the other is out on, it's not Northwest Military. It's out on Blanco Road. It's either Blanco or, I think it is probably on Blanco Road. It's Blanco or San Pedro. I just go to the one's right here in our neighborhood, and I don't make it out to the other one. But I'm sure you can Google it. There are two locations, and both of them are usually well-stocked here in San Antonio.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Can I still put spaghetti squash seeds in the ground?
Absolutely. Absolutely, okay. But do it soon.
Right. Okay. Thank you very much.
You're certainly welcome.
Oh, and actually, just about spaghetti squash, I've tried them before, and I know you have to have really, nice metal trellises for them to grow up on.
No, they grow on the ground just fine. They just take up a lot of room because they're much more vining.
And I won't have a problem with the spaghetti squash growing up the vines because they get so heavy.
That's why I just let them grow on the ground, not try to put them on a trellis. And once the squash starts to form, I'll sometimes take a little, piece of board or something like that and put them, raise them up off the ground, just so in case we do get lots of rain, we don't get any damage from the, like you say, they're quite big and heavy from sitting on the ground. But there's no reason if you were to put them, on a trellis or something like that. Sometimes, like you say, they're quite heavy. People become quite creative in how they will take something like, and ladies will take an old pair of pantyhose and make a little sling to hold them. There was one old fella over in Seguin I used to know he actually made a little platform he could hook onto his fence underneath it. He grew cantaloupes that same way too. So, if you want to grow it on a trellis, you certainly can, but you probably will have to support it one way or another. If you just grow it on the ground like you do your other squash, it'll take up more room, but it doesn't really have to be supported.
Okay, and so if I grow them on the ground, how far apart would I plant the seeds?
I plant the seeds like in a mound. I'll put 4 or 5 seeds in a mound, but I'll put my mounds at least 6 feet apart.
Okay. Okay, very good. Thank you.
Very good. Well, okay. I'll let you go. And, Wayne, we're just right up against news time, so we will make you first when we come back from this news break. Everybody else, there are a couple of open lines. Grab one at 210-599-5555. Oh, beautiful Saturday morning. You're listening to Gardening on KTSA Radio, San Antonio, Texas.
South Texas Gardening with Bob Webster is on the air. Talk to Bob now. 210-599-5555.
All right, let's get back to gardening. Jimmy, I know we've got Wayne waiting. If there's anybody else, send me that note if you would, please, while I say good morning, Wayne. Good morning, sir.
I don't know if this isn't going to be his garden as much as it is farming.
Okay.
I had to kind of tear into some of my hay field because I had quite a bit of pitting in it due to some hogs. Mm-hmm. And so I basically just dissed it up and, I'm in the process of dragging it right now. But I'm going to be going up to see Stuart over in Hondo later this week and going to pick up a bunch of fertilizer. I've got a nice fertilizer rig. Going to be putting that fertilizer down. I got a couple questions about that. Basically, I mean, I plan on putting down some liquid stuff that he's got for that's specifically formulated for hay. He told me about,
okay.
And I'm going to be putting it down. But right now I've got pretty good access to that soil, mm-hmm. and it's the liquid stuff. Should I be long term thinking about using dry, or should I really stick with liquid?
Well, liquid's faster acting, but not as long lasting, And I'm not sure which one. Stuart's making some great products. He's even got a new Has to Grow Super product out there. The liquids tend to act faster. You'll see more results more quickly, but they don't have the staying power. Your liquids are going to feed mow real well for maybe a month, whereas your dry granular products are going to feed for more like 3 to 4 months at a time. So if you've got the time and the equipment to put the liquid out, yeah, that's what's going to give you the most bang for your buck on a short-term basis. If you are, like me, limited on time you get to spend, the granular is easier because you only have to do it about a fourth as often. But most folks, including me, and of course, I don't have time to grow the hay like I once did, but I alternate. I'll put down some of the granular to start with, and then as the season moves on, I'll start using more of the liquid. So the choice is strictly, based on your equipment, your time, and your budget.
Okay.
There's no doubt that liquid works faster, but if you were relying solely on a liquid product, you'd have to use it more often.
Okay, well, that's good because I can apply both. I've got the equipment for both. And, my main thing right now is since I had to go through and basically level out my field.
Don't you hate those hogs?
Oh, my goodness. They really, I mean, it was so, the pitting that they did was so bad that whenever Google Earth last took pictures from outer space for the overlay, the aerial overlays, you could see where they pitted on my field. It was horrible.
That is a real bad story, but, I'll talk to, and I don't know who we have to get the approval from. They've got a new bait out there that's totally safe for people and pets, that the hogs eat it and they just go to sleep and die. It's a sodium nitrate bait. And,
wow.
the one of the things that's, reasons that it hasn't been approved, it's being tested at some of the wildlife places around, but, they say, oh, but it kills raccoons too. And, I'm sorry, but if it kills a few raccoons, that doesn't hurt my feelings either because they're not as destructive as the hogs, but they're destructive. But right now, I just can't tell you what a problem they are. My partner, her ranch is over 20 miles east of me, and she was visiting with one of her neighbors, and he and his brother had killed over 300 hogs in the previous 12 months. And as they were standing there talking, there was a group of about 12 of them right across the road up in front of them. So they reproduce like mad. The story is that they were originally brought to the country by the early explorers, supposedly early explorers, mainly from Spain and places. Every time they landed on an island, they'd let a few hogs go because they knew if they ever got shipwrecked and stranded there, they'd always have something to eat. But they're just a problem. A hog trap works pretty well, but then you got to shoot them in the trap and dispose of them. But I don't know. We're never going to eliminate them, but it takes a pretty active program to get them under control, and it sure would be good if the state would let us start using this bait.
Sure. Well, and you know, I'm hopeful that my little night vision optics that I have allow me to keep them scared off. But
yeah,
the other thing I'm worried about is you know, whenever I start that, because I'm going to really start getting focused on trying to amend the soil mm-hmm. with some of those products that I can get. And really, I from what I can tell, there's been no synthetic fertilizers or any. I mean, it's pretty much virgin out there. It's, mm-hmm. There's nobody that's doing anything with this place for a long time, and so I'm going to really try to start getting the soil beefed up and growing and doing the right things with it. But that was one of the things. Once I start doing that, is that going to attract more of those hogs?
Probably not. Anything that makes things grow. You know, those hogs are in there rooting around looking for different roots and grubs, and hogs will pretty much eat anything they can get hold of. But I don't think you'll find it will increase their activity, but neither will it decrease it. And there's nobody better than Stuart Frankie over there at Medina to help you put together a program that really works. That's what he's personally been doing for probably 50 years now, and he's turned a lot of country into much more highly productive. And you know, and that comes from the fact that they haven't ever used a lot of synthetic nitrogen on there, means that you're probably starting with a reasonable amount of organic material. So you're way ahead of a lot of folks, but things are just going to keep on getting better for you.
Sure. One other question. I've stumbled across some information on YouTube this week talking about regenerative farming. Has that got any basis, or is that a good idea?
You can find almost anything on the internet, as you well know. Regenerative agriculture is what, you know, everyone in this country should be practicing. But some of the proponents of it have some pretty far out ideas. I would look at an organization called Acres, ACRES, Acres USA. They are probably one of the best. Also, feel free to even contact the Rodale, R-O-D-A-L-E, Rodale Institute. They were the original proponents of organic farming and gardening, and nobody does more. Rodale now has more than one location around the country. I've been privileged to visit their original place up in Pennsylvania, and get on their mailing list, talk with them. They probably have more data about different things that you can do, and they have very much shown that organic, and this is more farming than ranching, but that the organic method not only produces at least as much as conventional, it produces much higher quality, and the farmer that's growing that stuff gets a lot higher price for his produce. So contact Rodale. Jeff Moyer just stepped down as CEO, but I think he's still very active up there. But get involved with them. They do some really good things. Acres USA does some really good things. And those are two groups that I would trust. Be sure they understand where you are and what you're doing so they can, you know, kind of tailor any advice they give you personally to the area we are in. But those are the two best guys out there, best organizations out there on regenerative agriculture that really works.
Okay. Well, Bob, that's what I got this morning. I sure appreciate the info.
Always a pleasure, Wayne. Keep up the good work and start eating more bacon.
Yeah.
we'll talk again. It's Sue's turn next. Good morning, Sue.
Morning, Bob.
Good morning.
I called you about 3 weeks ago.
Okay.
I had my front yard resodded with four pallets. It was St. Augustine grass. And I told you that I was expecting to get 50 shades of green grass, but instead I got 50 shades of yellow and brown and just lots of thatch.
Did they roll it when they put it down?
They did not roll it, and I just assumed everybody rolled it. So I didn't even ask when I was interviewing these people. So anyway, I complained to the landscaper. I sent pictures. I was texting him. And then he had like the sod company representative call me, and the sod company says, okay, we'll replace it. So I was relieved. I was glad to hear that. And then I wasn't hearing anything from the landscaper. So I texted him again, and he texted, oh, we'll do it next week. So I thought, oh, good. You know, they never came. I texted. They don't respond. They just never came. So then the next week I was thinking maybe compost would be good. So I texted again, will compost help with the struggling grass? Oh, that's a great idea. We can do that for you. Relieved again, and they never did come. And I text, and we'll come tomorrow. Never do. So anyway, it's a bad company.
Well, you know, put that out on the internet, share that with your friends, and
that's what I'm going to do.
Absolutely, and let them know you're doing it, because people like that shouldn't be in business.
So I won't use Angie's List anymore. I won't use that because that's.
You know, I've heard a bunch of complaints lately about Angie's List, not just on landscaping but other things. So it certainly doesn't seem to be reliable as it once was. But
I thought I could just borrow someone's truck, get a yard of compost called Site One. So do you think that would help if I put the compost over the areas that still have a lot of thatch?
There's no doubt that would help a great deal. Only thing I would suggest doing is put down some good organic fertilizer first. Put your compost on top of it. Medina's Growing Green, MaestroGrow's Texas Tea, Nature's Creations, Premium Lawn and Garden Food, any of those, the combination of that along with compost will do more than anything else.
Okay. So I was concerned it won't burn the grass, the compost?
No. You want to get it on before it gets any hotter, but we've got a pretty cool week coming up and potential for some rain, so I think it'd be probably the best thing you could do.
Okay. Is there a particular type of compost? Should I get one with topsoil in it?
No, you do not want any soil in it. If possible, I would ask for biosolids free, but it's getting harder and harder to find.
Oh, okay. Biosolids free.
Yeah, what part of town do you live in?
Northwest. So that site one off of like Leslie Road and 1604 was fairly close. I live by Dazavala and I-10.
Yeah, they're either there or they have a location going out I-10 this side of Bernie out there just beyond Leon Springs. And tell them that you would prefer non-biosolids, and that'll be a good starting place.
Okay.
I was just going to tell you one closing comment, but go ahead and ask what you're going to.
So I was trying to manually take out some of that thatch. Is that effective? Mm-hmm.
Just spray it down with some molasses. On your thatch, just get some molasses, put about 2 tablespoons per gallon, spray it down. That will stimulate the microbes. It will naturally break it down.
Okay, and do that before I do the fertilizer, before I do the
That would be ideal, but it's not absolute. You can do it at any point, and it will help. But if you have the time to do it first, then that would be the best of all worlds.
Okay. Because what the sod comes in, what the grass is growing in, it's really hard. So I thought I would need something to help loosen that up, too.
The compost will do a better job of that than anything else.
Okay. Okay, well, I'll try all that, and I'll hope for the best. Okay.
Well, and the one thing I was going to tell you, my little sister has lived in Mexico for probably 50 years, and her husband, I guess his third or fourth generation, built her an architect down there, and I've been so thankful. Eugenio told me the meaning of the word mañana, and it has explained so much to me. What do you think mañana means?
I thought it was yesterday.
Mañana is typically, people think it means tomorrow, Buddy Heaney told me that what it means is not today. Somebody tells you they're going to do it tomorrow, that means they have any intention of doing it the next day. It just means they're not going to do it today. And it sounds like you've been dealing with a bunch of shysters that live by the manana principle. So hope it'll get better. Sue, I'll let you go. Let me get a break in here. And Anna and Debbie will be my next two callers. And I get to talk to you for a minute about Medina Agriculture. Isn't that convenient? Medina is one of these companies that just makes really wonderful products that work with nature rather than against nature. And Stuart and his family and uncle before him have been doing this for, I guess, over 60 years now. And literally, they work worldwide with cleaning up toxic waste spills and things like that. But I think the products work right here at home is where they work the very best. And they're happy to help you with their products, whether you're a backyard gardener or whether you're farming or ranching thousands of acres. They work with a lot of different people and have for many years. And they have some products, well, if you want to see the whole list, you simply have to go to MedinaAg.com. I like focusing on their fertilizers, their soil activators, their liquid humate and dry humate products. And you probably might like to take a look if you're trying for some really fast results. Take a look at their new SuperGrow HastroGrow product. It's fortified. It was requested by a bunch of people in Florida for some different reasons, and so Stuart developed this, and it's something that really will kick things into high gear very, very quickly. It doesn't have the life in the soil that some of the other products do, but if you really feel like things are slow getting started this year, try some of the HastroGrow Premium. I'm trying to remember. It's like SuperGrow is what they're calling it. And it looks like a real good product. I'd love for you to try it and let me know what you think. I know several people that have tried it and been very, very well pleased with the results. You're always getting quality when you deal with products from Medina Agriculture.
South Texas Gardening with Bob Webster is on the air. News Talk 550 KTSA and FM 107.1.
All right, back to gardening, and the product I was trying to think of is HastroGrow SuperGrow. This is our new form of HastroGrow that's zero phosphate and a little bit higher in nitrogen, and like I say, it does produce faster and very, very good results. Next two callers are going to be Anna and Debbie. There's at least one open line. Grab it if you like at 210-599-5555. Anna is next. Good morning, Anna.
Hey, Bob. Greetings from Ohio.
Well, greetings to you. Has spring arrived in your part of the country?
Yes, it certainly has. I'm just waiting for the purple martins to fly in.
There don't seem to be as many in our part of the world this year. I'm not sure whether it's the extreme heat, the drought, or whether they're just running late. But they're back for us, but like I say, I'm not seeing the big colonies that I usually see. Hopefully, they're just a little slower getting here.
Yeah, I know they have to have some flying bugs to feed themselves, so I guess I haven't seen too much other than the carpenter bees so far.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, how can I help you this morning?
Well, the last time we talked, you gave me some information on Arbor Wood and EcoVantage.
Uh-huh.
And we're rebuilding some raised beds that are 3x8. There's six of them. So we priced out the pine, I think it was southern yellow pine, and it comes to about $3,000 to do those beds.
Wow.
And that's out of a place close to Cleveland, so it might be a couple of hundred miles from where we live.
And that probably is what makes it a little more expensive. I find that it's, at least for us, it's about the same price as Trex, which is the synthetic product that's made with wood fiber and a plastic material, and that's the other thing that's more or less permanent. It's just I like the EcoVantage because it's nicer looking, and it's not cheap, but remember, it's going to probably be there for 50 years, so when you amortize the cost out, it gets a little more reasonable.
Yeah, I think if we were probably 40 years old, it would work, but at 75, then we wouldn't get we'd probably get 10 years out of it. But we were thinking maybe to just go back with the treated lumber.
Well, They've taken the arsenic out of the treated lumber, but it's still got some pretty nasty products in there.
Is there something that we can line it with before we fill it with the soil and plants to keep it out of the root zone?
What I would do is probably paint it and talk to a good paint store about what they would use that would seal it better than anything else. That's going to be better than, you know, trying to do a plastic liner or anything like that. But same thing I tell people when they're using it to build playground equipment for kids and things like that. A couple of coats of a paint that really seals will accomplish the same thing with a lot less work and a lot better long-term results.
Okay. Yeah, because the cost for that treated lumber would be about $700 or $800 mm-hmm. versus $3,000. But that material, arborwood, really sounds like an awesome product. We may use it on our deck instead.
Well, it is a great material for decks. I've built one of our big greenhouses here is built out of that. We've pretty much redone all of our arbors and most of our, you know, our long-term decks. That's what we've done, and oh my gosh, people just absolutely love it.
Did you have to mortgage your business to buy it?
We did it a little at a time.
Oh, goodness. Okay. Well, we're still plotting whether to go for it or not, but I'll let you know what we do.
I will look forward to hearing from you, and you would appreciate, from what you were just saying, a good quote that I saw the other day, and it was, you know, it feels really weird to be the same age as old people.
Yeah, I know.
I'm just glad we're not old people. We just have been around the sun a few times, as Jimmy Buffett would have said. So you get out and have a great weekend. It's good to hear from you.
Hanging me up yet. I got a couple more things.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, let's go for it.
Yeah. The next one is we've got a couple of kefir pear trees that mm-hmm. produce like crazy. And is it just characteristic that they're grainy inside, or is it something I can fix?
Not really fixable. They're a hard pear, which leads to that graininess, but they're also pretty much totally resistant to the fire blight that kills so many of the softer pears. And you can ask around. You may have softer pears that will grow for you in your area, but down here, all the soft pears they're dead within a few years from the fire blight. And the kefir, the orient, the lacante, those are all fire blight resistant, but they're all a bit harder pears.
Okay, I'll just make do.
And I tell you, they sure do make good pear preserves or chutney. They're not quite as good as a pear just to wash it off and munch on it, but they're delicious for lots of other things. So I'm glad you got a bumper crop of them.
Yeah, that's what I do. Quick story before I get to my last comment is when we got married, we took a trip to the West Coast, and it was in October when I had to harvest all the pears, mm-hmm. and I took a couple of big milk containers full, and I thought, I can eat these all the way to California because they probably have an agricultural inspection station at the border. So right before we got there, I poked down, I don't know how many, like 10 pears in a couple of days prior, and we got to the border, and all the inspector said was, you got any live exotic animals? He didn't ask me if I had any fruit or vegetables or anything in our camper. So wow. There you go. Anyway, you recommend the steel battery-operated equipment.
Yes.
For so many things. And I finally decided to get a steel weed eater with a battery operated, and what an awesome piece that is.
Isn't it, though?
Awesome. Yeah.
I was using one day before yesterday, and I'll tell you, there are a lot of brands, you know, of battery-powered equipment out there, but steel is the best one out there for my money. The one thing I will caution you is don't drop the batteries. That's one thing about a lithium-ion battery. You can ruin it, you know, dropping it on a hard surface. And that's why you don't see more of them in carpenter's tools. But they're durable, and it's not like one little bump's going to cause some problems. But repeated carelessness, shall we say, which I know you're not going to do, but maybe somebody else is using yours. Just that's the one thing that will really shorten their lives. Steel has even upped the quality of their batteries. I've got a couple of new batteries out there. They're a little more expensive, but I know I was weeding for an hour and didn't even run down once on my line trimmer that I was using. So I'm glad you found them to be useful. I absolutely love their equipment.
Yeah, my battery goes about 20 minutes, maybe 30, if I use the one that's a little bit bigger, but that's it.
Yeah. Well, they've got, and you just have to ask a good steel dealer out there, but they've got an upgraded battery that, for me, lasts considerably longer, whether I'm using it in my chainsaw or in the line trimmer or the leaf blower or some of the other steel equipment I have. But they do make the best quality. And I think it's still true. I'm not 100% sure, but it used to be that anyone that sold steel equipment had to service it as well. And that's the problem with so many other good companies. You know, you see their products sitting in front of the box stores, but man, if you have a problem, I'm talking about John Deere and some of the other big names, you know, then it's up to you to find somebody that can repair or service them. And that's the nice thing about steel. Generally speaking, the place that you, if the people want to be steel dealers, they have to service the equipment they sell, and that's as it should be.
Yeah, we got ours at Ace Hardware, and they do have a repairman there.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, I don't think you're going to find it's going to need much repair. They're pretty durable.
I hope not. I'm going to wear it out because I still mow my front lawn with the weed eater and keep it really high, trying to squelch the weeds.
Well, you're doing a good job. And anyway, it's good to hear from you.
Yep.
I'll look and forward we'll to the next visit and hear about what you're doing on your new raised beds. And Debbie, hang on just a second. We will. You'll be up next. Looks like right this minute I get to talk about Azomite. And that's another product that I really, really have found to be just almost magical in what it does to green things up. Now, it's not a fertilizer. It's simply a supplement that provides every micronutrient out there. I think there are close to 100 different micronutrients and micronutrient compounds that are found in Azomite. And it's a natural ore mined in the western United States. It's not synthetic. Man doesn't do anything except grind it to the appropriate particle size. I use mostly granular Azomite because I can just get out there and sprinkle it around by hand. It doesn't have to be watered in. Doesn't really go to work until it gets some water on it, but it doesn't burn. They also have the micronized, the very finely powdered form of Azomite. Now, it doesn't dissolve. It goes into suspension, not into solution. So you have to keep shaking the sprayer, but this one's actually fine enough that it will go through a pump-up or a hose-in type sprayer. But Azomite just produces almost miraculous results when it, you know, gives your plants the iron, the zinc, the manganese, the cobalt, all those things they really need to stay green. Works with your fertilizer, but does not replace it. It's a great product. Look for it wherever fine quality gardening products are sold. It's Azomite, pronounced Azomite.
South Texas Gardening with Bob Webster. News Talk 550 KTSA and FM 1071.
All right, back to gardening and back to the phone lines. Going to be Debbie and Josh and James and Ted. Debbie's next. Good morning, Debbie. Hi, Debbie.
Good morning. How are you doing today?
I'm off to a good start. It's a beautiful morning out there with a chance of rain later, so very optimistic about the day.
Oh, me too. It is beautiful out. I have a couple of questions. You had mentioned last week about peach trees that were growing on one side. I actually have all the branches on one side of the tree is growing or it's starting to produce the leaves. The other side is bare.
Yep.
Is there something I should do with that or what?
Really, there's not much you can do. You could, if you wanted to, cut back the limbs that are bare, cut them back by maybe a third. Sometimes this will concentrate the little hormone that makes the leaf buds break and grow. But I've seen a lot of trees, and it was usually the north side that just simply got freeze damage this past year that really amazed me. The other thing is knowing that the roots on one side of a tree are, you know, the primary source of nutrients and water for the limbs on that side of the tree. So You can always fertilize a little bit more heavily, but I get out there and cut or snap the branches. Be sure that those branches are still alive before you put a lot of effort into it. But there's a little hormone that moves up through the sap as trees get ready to leaf out in the spring. And when it concentrates at a point, usually the end of the branch, that's what causes the leaf buds to start to sprout and grow. Sometimes if a plant has been really weakened, it just doesn't have the energy, it seems like, to come out. By cutting those limbs back by about a third, it concentrates this little bud break hormone and sometimes will just kick them into gear as far as coming out. But before you do that, scratch or snap a twig to be sure they are still alive. If they are, cut them back by about a third. If not, just trim them back and figure the peach tree will fill in eventually.
Okay, that sounds wonderful. I'll do that. Okay, second question. I have bought a majestic last spring, and it was too big to keep in the house or on the porch, so I ended up putting it in the ground. And it died back, you know, it froze back, but it's coming back. But there is a real sharp thing that's poking up, like, right behind it. My question is, do they reproduce?
Now, tell me once again what the plant was.
It was a majestic palm.
Majestic palm. Okay, I just got the majestic. Typically, no. The majesty palm or majestic palm is usually just a single trunk upright, and it is tropical. But I've never really heard of it coming up from the base. Now, pygmy date palm, Mediterranean fan palm, there are palms that do reproduce from the base, but I've never known the majesty. It's more like an areca or a kentia. I'm not going to say it's impossible. I would say wait and see what that little projection turns into. But most of the time, the only growth it produces is right from that center point at the top of the existing trunk.
Right. That's what I thought, too. I just wasn't, you know, I nearly cut my hand on it when I was digging around it, trying to, you know, aerate the soil a little bit. And
well, let me know what you find. That would be a surprise to me, but it's not a plant that I've ever tried growing outside. And it's as long as you give it enough light, it's an okay house plant, but it does get pretty big pretty quickly. So please keep me posted on what that turns out to be.
Oh, definitely will. I'll give you a call back in a couple of weeks or months, depending on how long it's going to take to actually. It's out of the ground, but I can't tell what it is. It's just a sharp point, like somebody, you know, like a tooth or something sticking up out of the ground.
Don't be going barefoot around it then.
Absolutely not. Okay, thank you. And the third question, I got four questions. The third question is a BT product. Mm-hmm. I bought that last year, and it worked really wonderful on my plants. I only had to use it one time.
Uh-huh.
But this year, how often can you use that because of the caterpillars that we've been infested with?
It's not absorbed into the plant in any way. It's totally water soluble, so use it as often as you need to. It will make it much more effective if you'll add about a teaspoon of molasses per gallon of spray that you make up. But I used to know very well the gentleman who actually founded the company that became Greenlight, a fellow named Barney Grimm. And he told me, we were looking at different products and trying to figure what the shelf life was on them. And he told me that if it didn't get overheated, he felt like BT would have like a 30-year shelf life. So it's probably still plenty good. But and he used to tell me it makes it about 20 times as effective if you'll add molasses to it at the rate of about a tablespoon per gallon of spray.
Okay, a tablespoon. I put a teaspoon. Okay, tablespoon. Okay, great. I'll try that. That's one thing I haven't tried, but I did get the molasses.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that will help. And like I say, use it as often as you feel like you need to. Most plants, it will kind of stick to the foliage. You won't have to use it very often. But on our cabbage and kale and things like that have such a slick leaf, yeah, you'll definitely have to use it more often.
Okay, great. Then I'll get that done, too. Okay, last question, and this is kind of silly. I had planted a parsley plant 2 years ago. Well, I had no idea they had a shelf life either, and evidently it's gone to seed. What do I do with it after that? Do I just pull it up and replant another one? Or
now tell me the plant once again.
It's a herb. It's a parsley plant.
Oh, parsley. Parsley. No, parsley is biennial. It usually lives a year and a half and then dies no matter what you do. When it decides to bloom, we call it bolting. That's the end of its life, so to speak, both the flat leaf and the curly parsley. So once it gets to that point, pull it up and plant another one.
Okay, that's what I was wondering. I'm like, it's beautiful. It's got flowers all over the top.
Oh, yeah.
But
yeah. It's 2 years to actually about a year and a half and done on parsley, but thank goodness it's cheap and easy to grow. Just, replant it as soon as you can.
Okay, great. I can do that. And just for FYI, I did do a garden this year and by myself. And everything looks great. Everything that you've said throughout the, every time I listen to you, I tried, and everything is just beautiful. Even the tomato plants are just coming out like crazy.
Yeah, it's going to be a learning experience, and everything's not going to stay perfect, but it's still going to produce a lot better than anything you can get at the grocery store. So you keep up the good work. Take some pictures so you can brag to your friends.
Absolutely. I do every day.
It sounds great, Debbie. I appreciate the call. Thank you. Goodbye. Let's see. I've got to get a break in here. Josh and James and Ted, you guys will be up next. Right now, looks like I get to talk about Rhonda's Nature's Way. And, I just love talking about Rhonda's Nature's Way because she has done so much to help me, to help so many of my friends. Finding a lot of people out there still fighting a few allergies with some of the pecan mold or pollen that's out there. Let me suggest what she has. It's called Seasonal Allergy Relief. Now, if you have really serious allergies to cedar and things like that, there's a product called Cedar X. But most of what's keeping you your head a little stopped up now, the Seasonal Allergy Relief will take care of it. And it's totally natural. It's not going to have any interaction with anything else, totally safe to use. I also love, every evening I take some of the different supplements that I get from Rhonda, things that support your immune system, things that just, make you feel better and give you the energy that you have to have in today's world. Rhonda also practices reflexology. They also do beamer light therapy, red light therapy, and just so many wonderful things. All the supplements, much better than you're going to find in a grocery store or on the shelves of any chain pharmacy. But the most important thing is her knowledge. I don't know anyone who knows more about human health and natural solutions to problems. Rhonda's just absolutely wonderful. I understand she's hiring at this point, too, for part-time. If you want to really learn and you have a good work ethic, let me tell you, you'll need that because they work hard at Rhonda's Nature's Way. But I know she's got her eyes open for another person or two to help her out over there. Get by and see them. Do as I do. They're over in the shopping center at the corner of I-10 and Callahan. Open right now. Open every day except Sunday. And if you want to live better naturally, fight off any problems you may have naturally, be it pain or sleep or digestive issues, you really need to talk to Rhonda's Nature's Way.
South Texas Gardening with Bob Webster is on the air. News Talk 550 KTSA and FM 107.1.
All right, back to gardening and straight to the phone lines. Josh is up next. Good morning, Josh.
Hey, good morning, sir.
Good morning.
Hey, you seem to know your stuff. I listen to you every Saturday morning when I go to work.
I appreciate that.
I have a question for you real quick. We have in front of our house, I think it's a pecan tree. It does produce a lot of sap. One of the tree limbs broke off recently, and it landed on top of our house. Didn't cause no damage or anything, but we have other big limbs that are stretching over our house, and it looks like the top of the tree is not producing any kind of leaves, no greenery whatsoever, but it's sprouting some green towards the base. Now, I'm wondering, because we have a slab of driveway that's around the tree. There's only a small circle of dirt that actually surrounds the tree that I could actually, do anything with, like pour some kind of, anything on there. I just can't figure out... Just trying to figure out what might be the best solution for that, if that tree is salvageable or...
I would suggest, again, check the base of the tree. Be sure that, you know, there hasn't been dirt filled in above what we call the root flare, which is where the trunk naturally broadens out as it gets down to ground level. If it gets buried long term, that will cause the tree to go into decline and ultimately die. Most arborists these days, rather than trying to open it up by hand, they use something called an air spade, and even in a fairly tight area, it might benefit your tree. You need to look at it. If it just looks like a telephone pole sticking up out of the ground, then the root flare is very definitely buried. If it's broadened out to where you can see the bigger roots, then that probably, you know, is not related to the problem. Now, pecans have suffered from drought. Pecans can put their roots a long way out, but last summer was so hot and so dry that I've seen pecans around that actually died from the drought. Your tree may have just been impacted by it. It may come out, but you may have some dead limbs in it. And by the way, that's not sap that comes dripping down. That's aphid poop is what it is, because a stressed pecan tree is really susceptible to aphids. And there's that sticky excrement that gets all over everything. That's not coming from the pecan. That's coming out the rear end of the aphid. So if you get the stress taken care of, you generally have less aphid problems and therefore less drippage. But it might be good to get a good arborist to take a look at it, because, you know, you might not be so fortunate. The next limb might do damage to the house, or, heaven forbid, fall on an automobile or a person or something else out there. But there are some good arborists out there. I recommend a gentleman named David Vaughn, V-A-U-G-H-A-N. I think it's Vaughn Arbor Care. David does nothing but consulting. He worked for a really good tree company for a lot of years and then got to a certain age and said, I don't have to work this hard anymore. He's somebody, and you might be able to just send him a picture and he can tell you what does or doesn't need to be done. But if you want to have somebody come out, he's the guy that I would recommend most highly. But without seeing it, I really can't tell you a whole lot more. But there are certain varieties of pecan trees, especially desirable, that have unusually brittle wood. And it's not unusual to have, you know, a limb come out of one. So you almost have to look at it and see if the limbs make a very narrow angle with the trunk or with other branches. Those are the ones that are most likely to split and break. But I guess the thing I would suggest most of all, first of all, check that trunk and be sure that it's not buried. Howard Garrett has, if you go to his website at dirtdoctor.com, you'll find something he calls a sick tree treatment. That would very definitely benefit your tree, and probably the first step in that is the being sure the root flare is exposed. But you know, if there's any way out around the edges of the driveway, or if you've got a big enough area of soil around the tree that your driveway then goes around, if we don't get a good rain, give it a very, very thorough deep watering, because I think that's the main thing that's bothering that tree. It's just the extreme drought we've been in for about 3 years now.
Okay. Yeah, because there's not a very big diameter around the tree where before the driveway actually takes place.
Right.
So, but yeah, I'll definitely look at that dirt doctor you talked about. One more question. So I want to build a garden in our yard. We don't have the greatest soil because a lot of times it's like it gets dry, like it has, I guess, here lately, you know, without and a lot of cracks in the ground. Just wanted to get your suggestion on what would be the best way to make a good garden using our yard, and then what's some good like stuff to use as far as like if we needed like soil or any kind of additives, because okay. I just want to do stuff like tomatoes, green beans, squash.
Well, first of all, be sure that you build your garden in a sunny area. All those plants need basically full sun, so don't make the mistake of building your garden in the shade. If your soil is a dark colored soil, even if it's hard, You can greatly improve it with a layer of compost, water it. The compost will help naturally soften it. And it's the main thing you need to turn poor soil into better quality soil. You'll add some fertilizer, some things like that when you actually plant. But long term, nothing will improve the soil more than compost will. Now, if you're sitting on a slab of rock, then I'm going to suggest building up either with rock, or some people use cinder blocks, some people use different woods, especially that Trex, which is like a synthetic wood. If you can just raise it up 12 inches or so and bring in a good quality soil, that's sort of an expensive, instant way to be able to garden a little bit more. To work with what you have, compost is going to be the principal thing you will add. And just put it on the surface, and as you plant, you'll gradually work a little bit of it in. But an inch or two of compost would be the number one thing I would do to get your soil in better shape.
Okay, is tilling the ground before planting and then putting a compost on top of it the best way to do it? Or
no, if you've got hard soil, that tiller's going to beat you to death. The compost will have a naturally softening effect just because of the humic acids and things that are in it. And tilling is going to bring up every weed seed known to man. So I'm not a big proponent of tilling. If you want to hang on a second, we can talk a little bit more, but I've got to go right now because it's KTSA San Antonio Radio.
South Texas Gardening with Bob Webster is on the air. Talk to Bob now. 210-599-5555.
All right, back to gardening. I believe that Josh dropped off there. I'm sorry, Ted dropped off there. So looks like it's going to be Josh dropped off. James, Ted, and
no, Josh
Janet.
Is here.
Oh, Josh is still there. Okay, very good. Didn't see him on the list there. Well, let's go back and talk a little bit further about that new garden bed you're creating. And does that give you at least some starting points?
Yes, sir. And just one more question about the garden, since you don't recommend tilling. If I'm going to plot out an area for the garden, ideally, what's the best way to clear out an area, if I should clear out at all, because of all the grass? We have, a lot of grass area. It's not just like, all dirt. We have a lot of grass in our yard. It was kind of dead over this last hot summer, but it's grown back a lot. And so what's a good way just to plot out a good area? Because we have most of our yards, just completely covered with sunlight. So
are your areas, are your grasses more weedy grasses, or are they more like a lawn-type grass, St. Augustine or Bermuda?
Well, I'm not really knowledgeable on that.
Okay. Well, the weedy type grasses, the things that tend to sprout up early in the spring, those are going to die with the heat. And where you can, just pull them up or just mow them off close to the ground and don't worry about them. Bermuda grass is the one that can be a problem, and tilling that would only make it worse. It chops it into little pieces, and then every little piece of it continues to sprout and grow. I'm going to say that most likely most of the grasses you deal with are going to die out as soon as it gets hot, and not to really worry about it. Unfortunately, with Bermuda, about the only way to really kill it is to cover it with plastic and do what we call solarizing it. We usually have to do that later in the season when the sun's a little bit more intense. So at this point, I would just pull what you can, put your compost on top of it, and go for it. Even if you fight a few weeds the first year, you'll still grow a good garden.
Okay, I know we do have some of the plants that, or some of the grass that produces those pricklies, the small little balls.
The sticker burr type of things. Those are all totally annuals. Those died completely over the winter. Anything that comes up, just pull them as best you can. The compost will keep a lot of those seeds from sprouting, so the only ones you really have to worry about are the ones that are already up and growing. But compost is a natural pre-emergent herbicide. The grass you're describing comes back from seed. It dies totally in the winter and comes back from seed. If it's not really sprouted yet, and I haven't seen much of them sprouting on my own property, but the compost will go a long way toward keeping them from coming back at all.
Okay, so just naturally spread the compost over it?
Yeah, about half an inch deep, maybe even a little bit deeper. water it down, and then just as you plant, you'll work a bit of it into the soil. You will want to, before you're ready to plant, you'll also want to put down some granular fertilizer, and then, you know, get with it. It's time to plant squash and cucumbers and bush beans. Time to plant, you can still plant. I'd recommend cherry tomatoes, big fruited tomatoes. They stop producing when the nighttime temperatures get really hot. So you might plant a couple of celebrities, but the main tomatoes I would focus on would be the cherry types. You can also produce about 20 different kinds of peppers and eggplant. I think it's warm enough now that you can plant okra. It just depends on how much space you have and what you and the family like to eat.
Okay. All right. Well, I appreciate your time, sir. Really,
if you're ever over our way, we've got a little garden guide we'll give you that has our recommended planting dates for both spring and fall. I think Fanix probably has a similar thing, but this is very specific to San Antonio, and I'd love to give you a copy of it if you're ever over near Shades of Green.
And where is that?
We're on Sunset Road, about halfway between Broadway and Jones Maltzberger, just south of the airport, to give you a part of town.
Okay, what's your store called? I'm sorry.
Shades of Green.
Shades of Green. Okay. Yeah. See, I'm recording this on my other phone, so I don't forget none of this.
Well, that's fine, too. But if you do, you know how to get back through. And we do this every Saturday, 5:30 till 9, and Sundays from 8 till 11. So look forward to helping every way we can.
Okay. Thank you so much for your time, sir.
You're certainly welcome. Thank you. Next in line is James. Good morning, James.
Morning, Bob. How you doing this morning?
Off to a good start. Have the potential for a good rain this afternoon and evening, so all is well.
Yes, sir. My onions are starting to fall over.
Mm-hmm.
And then I take them from the garden after they fall over, pull them out, go over to the shed where it's got a roof on it, and I set up tomato cages.
Uh-huh.
And then I put those onions on those rings.
Okay.
Start at the bottom of the cage.
Mm-hmm.
And put them on them rings. You get about 8 or 9 on a ring.
Uh-huh.
And then go to the next ring and put another layer. And it makes like a drying tower, I guess you call it. I don't know what you call it.
I think a drying tower is probably as good as you can do it, and I presume you probably just shake whatever dirt you can off the roots. Both onions and potatoes, a lot of people make the mistake of washing them, and you don't want to do that, and garlic's the same way. You want to just kind of brush or shake the dirt off of them and save your washing until you're ready to produce or to eat them, and they'll keep a lot longer.
Oh, I don't even shake the dirt off, but now that you've told me, I need to start doing that.
Well, that's up to you. It's just getting them a little cleaner and not quite as heavy, but there's absolutely no mandate to do it, but some people just want it to look a little neater and nicer out there. But the main thing is, don't wash them. You can brush them or not brush them, but don't wash them or you can get some rot started.
Well, that tower seems to hold up. I got some pretty big onions I'm putting on there. It seems to hold up, and I got quite a few of them tomato cages that are excess to my needs. So
It
works out pretty good. You can stack a bunch of onions in a small space.
Oh, yeah.
The most important thing is to keep the rain off.
Oh, yeah.
And make sure you got a roof on it.
And keep the air circulating around them, and that sounds like the perfect way to do it.
Well, I just thought I'd share that with your listeners. That's the way I'm doing it this year. And then once they get all dried out and you cut the roots and the dried tops off, I got some old chain link gates that we put on sawhorses, and that's where they go after that.
Yeah, it's you're exactly right. You don't want to stack them. You don't want them sitting right on top of each other. And James, your advice is always welcome and appreciated by all of us. So we've just learned about James's onion tower, and it sounds like a great thing to do. It's just a great way to keep them up so that they go through that drying naturally and put a lot of onions in a small area.
Okay, well, I got to get ready and go cut cilantro for the restaurant, man. But I just wanted to share that with you guys about the onions this morning.
Appreciate so much you doing so. Get out and have a great weekend, and I know we'll talk again. And I believe Ted is next in line now. Good morning, Ted.
Hello, Bob.
Good morning.
I have a jasmine bed in my front here. It's about 10 by 30, maybe 40 feet. And last summer in the heat, my sprinkler system wasn't working, so I lost probably about 80% of it. And I'm going to have it replanted this week. And I wanted to see if I treat that the same way you advised an earlier caller to, you know, put down organic fertilizer first and compost. And then
that's what I would do. Yeah, I don't believe in, you know, just digging a big hole and adding a lot of good soil to it. I like just, you know, put the native soil back around. But a little bit of slow-release fertilizer, and that could be Medina or Moisture Grower Nature's Creation, that will certainly get those roots off to a good start. And, of course, give them a good, thorough soaking. And, as you know, those things, it seems like they grow about a foot a week, so this is a real good time to be doing it.
And how often do I have to water them, the new plants?
That is really going to depend on the weather. The windier it is, the sunnier it is, the warmer it is, the faster they will dry out. I just would take your finger, feel the soil at the base of the plant, and water when it's dry about a knuckle deep. It's time to water thoroughly again. I'm going to say probably about every other day. But just remember, there's no such thing as too much water, but there is too often. So when you water them, really flood them, really soak them thoroughly. Then when you can feel that soil surface and it feels dry, it's time to do it again.
Okay, and go on like that for, what, 3 or 4 weeks?
Actually, go on like that indefinitely. But what you're going to find is as they get better and better rooted, they won't dry out, you know, as often. Yeah, after probably a month or so, you'll probably be able to cut your watering back to about, maybe a third of what you've been doing in the past. But still remember that when you water, to water very, very thoroughly.
Right. Well, I figured, you know, I can only water one day a week with a sprinkler. So I'm just looking to see when I can rely on that, and it sounds like fun.
Well, as far as I know, they still will allow you to water by hand anytime. This is not a big area, so sprinkler systems don't do a very good job of wetting the soil deeply. I'm going to recommend you do most of your watering by hand on that area, but it's not going to take that long. You know, handheld hose is allowed most any time, and that's going to be the best way because you can apply the water directly to the base of the plants you're trying to get established. So it's very efficient water usage, and it won't be long before you get to where you don't have to water it more than once a week. But I still think hand watering is going to do a better job for you.
Okay. And I had the same problem with some of my St. Augustine in the backyard. I lost a pretty good area of it, and I'm thinking I'm going to wait until fall to resod that. Is that a good plan?
Well, it depends on how much time you have. There's no reason you have to wait till fall. And if you don't want to resod the whole area solidly with new grass, if you've got good grass in other parts of your yard, as you've got the time and energy, I just go dig up some little squares, maybe 3 inches square or 4 inches square, and plant those out in the middle of the dead areas, water them and fertilize them, and you may find that by fall they're filling in well enough you don't have to buy any new grass at all.
Okay. But again, those need to be watered thoroughly?
Yeah, need to be watered regularly, but and where you dig it out, just, you know, a handful of compost back into that area. Your existing St. Augustine, especially if we get a little bit more rain, it's going to fill in so quickly you'll never know where you dug those little squares out, and you'll be amazed at how rapidly they will fill in. Years ago, I worked for a nursery, and we grew our own grass and actually planted grass for people. I can hardly imagine that, but we would put the little squares like 1 foot on center, and by the end of one season, it had grown solidly into a beautiful solid yard. So just a thought. If you want to wait and resod in the fall, there's no problem with that, but there's really no reason to. If you can just dig some little plugs and plant them here and there, I think you'd be amazed how quickly they grow and fill in.
Okay. And if I were to wait till fall, putting some compost on that area now, would that be a good idea?
That would greatly improve the soil there, and you might be surprised some of that existing grass might just come to life and begin growing. But yeah, putting some compost down and watering thoroughly, that's going to do wonders for the soil.
Okay, great. All right, well, thank you very much, Bob. I appreciate your help.
My pleasure. Thank you for the call this morning. All right, need to get a break in here. Looks like I get to talk to you about Sam Sitterly and Green Grow Organics. Again, somebody that I love talking about. Sam's been at it for over 30 years now, and his principal work that he does is as a consultant. If you have problems in your yard, if you're trying to decide what to plant in a given area, or maybe you just can't figure out why something's not doing as well as it should, Sam's the guy that will actually come out, walk your landscape with you, and tell you exactly what's going on and how to fix it or just how to make it grow better. Like I say, he's been doing this for many, many years, consulted with, I'm sure, tens of thousands of people, and it's still his principal profession. Now, the one thing that they have added that I absolutely love is they have come up with a quarterly service where they will automatically come out and take care of the fertilizing and anything else that your landscape needs, but there's no long-term contract, and they will never use any toxic chemicals. Everything they do is organic, and they'll take care of the fertilizing, at least on an annual basis. They'll add micronutrients. They will always put out nematodes if it looks like you're going to have a problem with grubs or fleas, things like that. Sam's offering lots of services and very, very knowledgeable. He and his staff can just figure out just about any problem that could occur in your landscape, having done it for 30 to 40 years now. The company is Green Grow Organics. Check them out at greengroworganics.com. Or give them a call at 210-599-5565, 210-599-5565 for Sam Sitterly and Green Grow Organics.
South Texas Gardening with Bob Webster, News Talk 550 KTSA and FM 107.1.
All right, back to gardening. Looks like Janice and Fred are my next two callers. Janice is first in line. Good morning.
Good morning, Bob.
Good morning.
I had called in earlier this year, and I had issues with my grass, and you told me to use compost, which it is working.
Good.
My question is, other types of soil that you see, I've got some beds that need soil in it. So would you put compost, in-ground soil? What would you do to kind of build that up?
How much do you need to raise it, like an inch or two or a foot or two?
Inches.
Okay. I would just add compost to the surface. You can kind of blend it in, although I don't think you really need to do so. If you plan to do additional planting in that bed, just kind of, you know, mix it into the soil as you go. But even just on the surface, it's gonna soften the soil underneath it. And then, like I say, any planting you do, you're going to kind of mix it in a little bit. But I certainly wouldn't feel like you have to get out and spade it in or turn it in with a digging fork or anything like that. Just an inch or two of compost on top should be all you need. They make what they call top dressing or lawn dressing, which has a like petite red sand added to it. But in this case, I don't think you really need it. I'd just add compost alone.
Okay. And then what is Turf Builder, and would you ever use it?
The only product that I know of called Turf Builder is a synthetic nitrogen fertilizer that is not anything I would ever put on my yard. It's a very high nitrogen, very fast release, can dehydrate, and it tends to burn organic material out of the soil. It's not a product that I would ever want to have around my place.
Okay. Then I have an area where I cannot grow grass for years, and it is like cement. Mm-hmm. What would I do to aerate it, and what type of grass should I use? My current grass is that carpet grass, but this is up near a brick fence, and it is—I'm not kidding—it's like cement.
It may be that it's just too shady for any grass to do well. Again, compost is what will soften that soil better than anything else, and if periodically you will soak it down with a product like Medina Soil Activator or Medina Plus is an even better product that they've created. But if you're having lots and lots of trouble with grass, I'd think about going with a ground cover like Vinca Major or Asian Jasmine, or you know, you could even plant some perennials in there that are very tolerant of sun and heat, Salvia greggii, pink skullcap. If you want a different ground cover, it goes away in the winter months, but there is a super hardy plant they call dwarf plumbago. It's not really a plumbago at all. It's something called Serratus stigma. But it beautiful, dark, dark blue flowers, very, very hardy. I've got a couple of big patches, and I think even with all the heat and drought last summer, I watered twice, and it's still beautiful. It does go away in the winter, goes back to ground level, but it's come back every year for probably 20 years now. So that would be a good grass substitute. But again, to improve the soil, just a good layer of compost and a good thorough soaking.
Okay. And then my last question is, I have used the vinegar solution with the orange oil and a dash of soap.
Right.
It's hard to find it here, so if you, you know, I can get pickling up to, I think, 10% or something.
Yeah.
If I use that, will that do anything?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it will get all your tender weeds, most of the weeds you're fighting at this time of year. It does a good job against clover and, you know, dandelions, henbit, all of those things. The pickling vinegar usually is 9%, and it's probably all you need. But when you start fighting the really tough stuff, it's just not quite as effective. Where are you?
I'm in Corpus.
You're in Corpus. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry that you know that most of your good nurseries down there just aren't anymore. James and Sally Gill used to keep so many good things down there, but. Just when you come to San Antonio, I think everybody here's got it. But in the meantime, just get your good old pickling vinegar. Most of the weeds you're fighting at this time of the year, that'll take care of them. And strange as it may sound, weeds are easiest to kill when they're in active growth. So if you've got a weedy patch, water it first and then use your vinegar on it, and it'll be do a lot better job of killing it out completely.
Oh, okay. Okay. Great. Okay. Well, I appreciate it, and you have a good day.
And you do the same, and enjoy your coastal life down there. You're living in a great part of the world, Janice, and we'll talk again. Fred, hang on. You will be up next. It looks like I get to talk to you about a good product called, or a good company called Aqualock, and a couple of their really good products. So it's a new company, a relatively new product. There have been similar products before, but this seems to be about the best of the best as far as creating, I think the technical term is a hydrophilic colloid, which means basically something that absorbs and holds water and nutrients in the soil. Now, something you have to blend in with the soil, and the specific name of the product is Terraloc, T-E-R-R-A-L-O-C-H. And it lasts about a year and a half in the soil. It's great for potted plants because you can actually blend it into the soil. Great for hanging baskets, and it'll reduce your watering. You know, you won't have to water probably half as often or maybe even a third as often through the hot, hot summer months because it does such a good job of holding the moisture in the soil. Their other product is called Supercast, and what that is just some of the best worm casting material you'll ever find, fortified with all sorts of biostimulants, and then a small amount of the Terraloc added to help with moisture retention. Good products, companies up in Bernie, veteran owned. Look for products from Aqualock, the Supercast and the Terraloc.
South Texas Gardening with Bob Webster is on the air. News Talk 550 KTSA and FM 1071.
All right, back to the phone lines, and next in line is Fred. Good morning, Fred.
Good morning, Bob. How are you doing?
Off to a good start. It's going to be a good day out there. A little humid, but man, we need rain. I'd rather it come between 7 in the evening and 7 in the morning, but right now we're getting desperate.
Yes, sir. I'm with you there. Hey, I've got a 9-year-old red oak out here in Marion that I'm concerned about. It's got an 18-inch circumference on the trunk, and I've noticed this week that from the ground up about 2.5 feet, the bark is splitting on it, and actually at about a foot above the ground, the bark has started to fall off. Now, I thought maybe one of the grandkids might have gotten a hold of it with the bat or something like that, but I noticed in the exposed hardwood, there's some little trails, I don't know, 1/8 to 1/4 inch wide.
Okay.
That are kind of burrowed into it, not bored, but burrowed along the surface.
Mm-hmm.
And can you tell me what might be going on with that tree?
Well, that is a borer. It's probably what's called a flathead borer that just, and that's where it works. It's not one of the borers that goes deep into the wood. It just kind of between the bark and the wood itself. How does the foliage on the red oak look? How's the new growth coming out this spring look?
Now, it looks beautiful right now. I've got another red oak there on the other side of the yard. It's a little healthier looking, but the foliage looks good. And I did notice this morning while I was looking at it some black sap coming out in a couple of areas in the upper area of the tree.
Okay, well, that's, sure what that. That's an indication the tree is stressed. And, you know, of course, you want to look at the base, be sure that the root flare is well exposed on it. Red oaks got stressed by the cold following the long drought. I mean, red oaks are probably our most drought-tolerant tree once they're established, but even red oaks suffered last summer. And
yes.
Some splits in the bark are not unusual. In fact, you know, bark doesn't stretch very well. And in a young tree, and this is still a young tree, red oaks probably live 50 or 60 years as opposed to 200 or 300 like live oaks. But this is still a pretty young tree, and it's probably actively growing. So I doubt very much there's really any cause for concern. And if the new growth on the tree looks good, that's the best indication that, you know, the tree's in good health. Anytime you have trees in stress, the so-called sick tree treatment, and you'll find the whole story on that at dirtdoctor.com, would benefit that tree. But it sounds to me like what you're looking at is just stress issues. And red oaks, of course, they don't need to be watered all that often, but they do need a good thorough soaking. And the biggest problem we've had, for at least where I live, in the past 6 months is just we've gotten rainfall enough to keep the grass very happy, but very little, you know, to actually get down to the roots of the tree. So if we don't get good rains today and tomorrow, you might just lay the hose out at the base of the tree, turn on, let it run for several hours. And but beyond that, I don't think there's a whole lot you really can do or a whole lot you need to do. Doesn't sound to me like the tree's in any real trouble at all.
Okay, sounds good. So other than the sick tree treatment, don't worry about the flatheads.
I didn't see any
sign of insect of any kind on there.
Now this tree, from the size that you're telling me, most of the bark is already has turned to that kind of rough, mature looking bark, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's got a little roughness to it. It's not slick anymore like it was originally.
Well, back when it was slick, and if you plant any more trees with a slick bark like that, you can actually make a relatively concentrated solution of orange oil. It will go through the bark, kill the borers underneath it without harming the tree in any way. But once that bark really, and what happens is just the bark's being pushed outward and the old bark is just aging and drying. And the orange oil is not going to go through that the way it would. But when a tree still has smooth bark, whether it's an oak tree or a peach tree, if you feel like you might have borers in it, orange oil will take care of it, again, totally safely, non-toxic to people and pets. And it actually, you don't want to make it too strong, but it will actually go through the bark and kill the borers underneath it.
All right, sir. Well, I sure appreciate your info.
Well, it's always a pleasure visiting with you, Fred. You call any time and keep me posted on how the red oaks are doing.
Yes, thank you. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Looks like it's going to be Rex and John and David. Rex, next in line is Rex. Good morning, Rex.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling. I appreciate it.
I have a quick question. My wife and I have purchased and planted two Victoria red grapevines,
okay,
approximately 40 feet apart.
Uh-huh.
And we planted a third different variety. And my wife is curious, and so am I, if they would cross-pollinate and change the flavors of each grapes.
Well, that's not how cross-pollination works. It's kind of like saying if you bred a Chihuahua and a Great Dane together, you wouldn't change the Chihuahua and you wouldn't change the Great Dane, but you might get some weird puppies out of the deal. And even if you did cross-pollinate, it wouldn't affect the present generation. The two different kinds of grapes are going to go on producing their kind of grape. But if you save the seeds and planted them, yeah, you might get some different flavors and things like that. So planting, you know, as long as you're not saving seed and trying to grow new plants, being pollinated by a different plant doesn't affect anything. I always have people that are worried if their jalapeno pollinates their bell pepper, it's going to be hot in flavor. And no, it doesn't work that way. But if you took the seeds from that mating, so to speak, then yeah, you might get some different things. But tell your wife, no worries. Those grapevines are going to go on producing the grape that they would produce, whether there are other varieties around or not.
Okay. Thank you for the information. Second question, I have a pasture that is full of mesquite, brush, and just about everything else under the sun. I want to try to restore it back to its original plant that was established 300-400 years ago before the mesquites came so prevalent down here.
Okay.
After I bring in a milling machine, brush eater, and eat that brush out, should I plow it or should I let that act as a compost?
Well, you know, if you can root plow it, that would be fine. Now, let me ask you, the mesquites that's in there, is it that small thorny brush that you couldn't ride a horse through, or do you have some big mesquite trees?
I have both, some bull mesquite and a lot of that little brush.
Okay, the brush, you want to grind it down as best you can. Lots of it's probably going to sprout back out. If you can root plow it, you will reduce that to some extent, but eventually you know, don't let anybody talk you into using Remedy or some of these super toxic products, because they're not going to do that much good. But where you have big mesquite trees, leave them alone. And you may have noticed this, a mature mesquite tree actually produces a chemical out through its roots that keeps the seed from germinating. And that's the biggest mistake that some of our ancestors made, was cutting down, because in dry areas and relatively poor soils, mesquite's one of the few things that really grows well. And if you've got just some big old mature mesquite trees, you can grow perfectly good grass for cattle or anything else underneath them. But when people go through and start cutting down all their big mesquites, that's when that nasty thorny stuff just takes over and just becomes an impenetrable thicket. So I would be very careful in what you do. Grind as best you can anywhere you've got the small thorny mesquite, but leave your big trees alone, because they're actually working to prevent more of those little ones from getting started.
All right, thank you, sir, for the information.
It's called alleliopathic, if you ever want to look up. It's when something produces something through its roots that keeps other things from growing. And your big old mesquite, not a bad tree to have, but boy, that young stuff. If you want any more of it, you can come dig up all you want off my place, because I'm doing the same thing. And I'll tell you, if there are places that you have to kill it, this is not organic, but sometimes, you know, just as long as you're staying away from Remedy and that stuff, sometimes if you cut it off at ground level, soak that stump with a little bit of just pure diesel, that will kill it. Come back and follow it up with some molasses. It stimulates the microbes. It'll clean up any residue that's left from that. But in general, start out with your cutting and root plowing, and then see what might come back that you have to do, and we can talk then, and we'll talk about the best ways to deal with it.
All right, thank you, sir.
It's always a pleasure. Thank you for the call, Rex. I appreciate
it.
Let me mention one thing. Those of y'all looking forward to our usual 8 o'clock visit with Howard Garrett. Howard is giving a talk this morning, and he's not going to be with us today. So we're just going to continue straight on through with phone calls all the way up till 9 o'clock. Howard will be back next week, but I got an apologetic text from him last night saying I got to go give this talk, so we'll do it again next week. So anyway, we're just going to keep on going, and John is next in line. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Bob.
Morning, sir.
A couple of weeks ago, I talked to you about Nature Creation bagging this sick tree treatment.
Right.
You didn't think they were doing that anymore. But I heard you yesterday, or last week it was, you told a lady that apparently they were doing it to use that. Did you find out if they were bagging it again?
It's not Nature's Creation. It's Maestro Grow. And Maestro Grow is bagging it, and I mean, these are clever people. I like the Maestro Grow people very much, but I never would have thought of this. But Chris came up with the idea. One of the ingredients in the sick tree treatment is cornmeal. And obviously, you can't blend that in and put it in a bag and then just stack it on a pallet and leave it. So when you open a bag of their sick tree treatment, inside, along with the other good things, you're going to find a plastic bag of cornmeal that you can open and mix in when you're ready to put it out. So they're not only still producing it, they're doing something I think is just really, really clever. But in this case, it is Maestro Grow rather than Nature's Creation.
Do you carry it?
Yes, we do.
Oh, okay. Very good. Yeah. I'll see you soon then. Thank you.
You are certainly welcome. I appreciate the call. Thank you, John. All right, David, hang on a second. Got to get my last break of the hour in here, and it looks like I get to talk about Wild Birds Unlimited, and oh, I love talking about Wild Birds Unlimited. Such a neat store, and I've done business with them here in San Antonio for many, many years, talking about the store that's out there in the shopping center at the corner of Northwest Military and Huebner Road. Well, same great folks have now opened a northern store, so to speak. They're out on the north edge of Burney. Actually, you're halfway, you're almost out of Burney before you'll find them. You're headed out Main Street, and when you get out to, there's a little area of buildings on the right-hand side. I believe it's Market Street, and that's where you're going to find Wild Birds Unlimited, and it's the same people and the same products that they carry in the store in San Antonio. Same great feeders, same great nesting boxes, and the same great gift selection. They're Wild Birds Unlimited all around, but the gift selection is always independently acquired, and Kyle's done just a great job of stocking up the store out there, just as he has the Northwest Military store. And again, still going to have both locations. They're not replacing one store with the other. They've just expanded out north. So folks up in Comfort and Fredericksburg, you don't have to drive all the way into San Antonio to find your great Wild Birds Unlimited products. And, of course, it's still the same great knowledge, the ability to help you with all your questions. I'd have to let you call them to check on hours and days, but just want you to know that there is now a second Wild Birds Unlimited with the same great staff and the same great selection of products. Wild Birds Unlimited.
South Texas Gardening with Bob Webster. News Talk 550 KTSA and FM 107.1.
All right, back to gardening. It's going to be David and then Chris. David's first. Good morning, David.
Hey, Bob. Got several questions here. Hopefully I can fire them off, and I know you got the answers.
I'll do my best.
Persimmon tree. Basically died, broke off at the ground. Shoot coming back up. Is that persimmons? Are they grafted? Is that just a wild tree coming up, or
are what kind of persimmons are we talking about? Are these the Asian persimmons like Fuyu and yep. Tamapan and Taninashi? Yes, they are grafted. Yep. Yeah, they are grafted. Okay. If it's coming out below the graft point, you would either need to regraft them or replace them. I'm surprised. They're usually a much hardier tree. It may be that the drought just took a toll on them last year because they're totally cold hardy.
Okay. Tulip tree. Cousin gave me some seeds. I've been trying to grow a tulip tree. It died. It's probably, the root stock is probably 5 years old or better. Again, freeze or drought coming back up. Is that going to be a tulip tree?
Now, what you're calling tulip tree is the deciduous magnolia. Is that correct? Where I spent some of my growing up years in East Tennessee, we actually had a something called a tulip tree that was actually liriodendron. It doesn't really do well here. What most people call tulip tree is a magnolia tree that drops its leaves in the winter, generally blooms with pink blooms, and then puts its leaves on after it blooms in the spring. Is that what yours is?
Well, mine never blooms, so it gets about, 4 or 5 foot, and then we either have a drought or freeze. Yeah. If it freezes, I'd wrap it and everything, but it didn't make it.
Well, probably the drought. The freeze shouldn't have bothered it. I hate to say it, but some of them are grafted, some of them aren't. Some of them are actually cutting grown trees. So I, again, don't worry about the wrapping it, but do give it a good, thorough, deep watering. Give it probably some liquid fertilizer is going to help bring it out most quickly. But if it's coming back up, It has a potential. The potential, most of the time, these things grow really as more of a bush than they do as a tree. California, yeah, they'll actually get up and make a tree, but here they're very bushy. They, they'll get, 12, 15 feet tall. But I would leave it and see what it does. It would be difficult to regraft it, but it may very well be one of these that's grown either from a cutting or from tissue propagation, and I'd give it a good year to see what it's going to do. It's normal for it to drop its leaves in the winter, and then if it's mature, it should produce flowers before it produces leaves, if it's getting at least half day of sun.
Okay. Fertilizer for citrus or, citrus tree, orange or grapefruit, what type?
In a container or in the ground?
In the ground.
You can use the same thing you use on your grass. One of the Medina products, or Maestro Grow, or Nature's Creation. All of those fertilizers will work fine on citrus. If you want something that says specifically citrus on the label, Espoma is a company that actually makes what they call a citrus fertilizer. Is it that much better? Nah, I don't know that it's that much better, but I do know that Fanix, I tell you about Fanix Nursery, they're selling it for 20, all Espoma products are 20% off this weekend. So if you want to give it a try, run over and pick some up. But I think just a good old growing green from Medina is going to work just fine on your citrus.
Okay. solution orange oil for borers. What ratio? Excuse me.
I'd use about 4 tablespoons per gallon. And this is going to kill the flathead borer. That's the one that does most damage to peaches and plums and things like that. The so-called shot hole borer, or that actually digs way down into the wood but doesn't really do much damage to the tree, not necessarily going to get those. But the flathead borers that are just right underneath the bark and responsible for a lot of damage in fruit trees especially, about 4 tablespoons per gallon. Spray it on the bark while it's still that smooth, soft bark. The orange oil will go right through and kill the borers underneath.
Okay. I got a couple of grandsons born or raised in Irving, Texas.
Uh-huh.
My son at the hospital, both my daughters graduated from SMU, so we just call them SMU oak trees, the big, big acorn.
Well,
is that a red oak? Is that a, give me a name, I guess is what I'm asking.
Is it a big acorn, really big acorn?
Really big.
Okay, that's probably a bur oak. Yeah, SMU is my alma mater, and I've spent some happy times around the Las Colinas area out there when we used to have nurserymen's meeting up there. So know the area and know the hilltop extremely well, but know what you're probably looking at is a bur oak. And it's a deciduous oak. It's not susceptible to oak wilt. It's typically a really, really good quality oak.
Okay. And one more question. Ladybug, is that still around?
No. The company, Ladybug, you may still find a few of their products, but they had one tragic incident up there, and I think John Dromgoole just kind of got tired of doing that and is doing other things. I know some they've found some of the product in some of the warehouses, and they're charging a real pretty penny for it. But unfortunately, that's a brand that's pretty much gone away.
Okay. All right. So I live off I-10 about 100 miles east from you. So most things that your information, I kind of take it that is same geographical or things to grow and not to grow. So,
well, for the most part, yes, but 100 miles east, you're in much deeper soil, and you can grow a lot of things a lot better. When it comes to red oaks, you can grow some things like the Schumards that do very poorly in the hill country. So you actually have more options and more things that'll do with it because your soil's a little bit better. But I appreciate you listening and calling, and go out and plant some bur oaks or some SMU oaks, whatever you want to call them.
Very good. And I thank you for all the information, Bob.
It's always a pleasure, sir. Thank you. All right. We are very close to news time. As I mentioned a minute ago, Howard Garrett is on a speaking engagement today, so we won't have our usual visit with the Dirt Doctor after the news. We will go on with more phone calls. We've got a couple open lines. If you want to grab one of them, you know you're listening to KTSA San Antonio, Texas, right back after news.
South Texas Gardening with Bob Webster is on the air. Talk to Bob now. 210-599-5555.
Yeah, but every line's taken right this second, so wait just a minute before you dial. It'll be Chris and Jill and Mark and Robert. Howard Garrett's had a speaking engagement this morning, so we'll get back with the Dirt Doctor next week. But right now, it's your questions, and Chris is first in line. Good morning, Chris.
Hey, I just got in line where I am. Can you put me behind Jill? Is that possible?
Jimmy, put him back on hold, and we'll talk to Jill first. Good morning, Jill.
Good morning. Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you today?
We're doing great. We're trying to get some seeds out before the rain. However, we do have a little caution on it. It's regarding bluebonnet seeds. We bought a pound of bluebonnet seeds. We had our gravel road to the farm to market road re-graveled, mm-hmm. leaving some of the sides bare. And we'd like to have bluebonnets on the side and to put those seeds out directly into the bare ground. And the Bermuda grass is growing so fast, so by the time fall comes here, whatever month, October, it's going to be all covered.
Plant your seed now. Just keep them cool and dry. Here's the problem. If you plant bluebonnet seed this year, and I know you're sitting there saying, well, but look, Mother Nature's about to plant it all. If we get a hot, dry summer, the bluebonnets go through two different life stages. The first stage is a little low rosette of leaves, and it takes a couple of months for this to grow. And then if conditions are right, then it puts up its little sprout and produces blooms. But what happens some years, and who knows, this may very well be one of them, we get enough rain at the end of the spring for a bunch of little plants to sprout and start growing, and then it turns off very hot and dry, and they die, and we actually have fewer bluebonnets the next year than we would otherwise. So I know they didn't just give you that seed out of their generous hearts, but it will be fine to plant in the fall, but I would put off planting it till October or November, unless you have a crystal ball that tells me we're going to get regular weekly rains pretty much through the summer months.
That's kind of what I was thinking, too, but now it's so much easier. The ground is exposed. So then at that mm-hmm. time, we had the Bermuda and the grasses. So probably you would suggest us clearing that grass at certain places and planting the seeds.
The seed needs to make good contact with the soil to sprout and grow. But if only half the seed gets through the grass and everything and down to the soil, that's the way Mother Nature intended it. That's why the bluebonnet has such a tough coating on it, and why it can lie there for 10 years if it has to and then still sprout and grow and come up and give us the beautiful blooms. This year, apparently, just everything went right. The bluebonnets were beautiful most places, and it looks like they've made a lot of seed. We just have to hope that if it's going to be dry, it needs to stay dry. But if it's enough moisture to get the seeds to germinate, they probably will not survive the summer months. So considering that you paid a bunch of money for that seed, I'd put it off and plant it in October when you have a much better crop of getting a good, a bit, much better chance of getting a bluebonnet crop next spring. And all you have to really do is scratch the surface of it, just drag it with something. Your seed, you're going to get plenty of it down to ground level. I know it's nice looking at the dirt now, but I really wouldn't suggest planting bluebonnet seed this late.
Right, and to scratch the surface, would you recommend some fine sandpaper? Or
No, I'm talking about the surface of the soil. Scratching the surface of the seed is fine, but I'll tell you what I do. I just put a cedar log behind the gator and just drive over it and drag it along. That's going to expose plenty of soil for you to plant your seed up and down your driveway.
Right. Okay. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Great question. I appreciate the call this morning. Thank you. All right. Now, Chris, are you ready to talk? Good morning again.
Yes, I am. Finally. Okay. Hello, everybody. Good. Two things. No, I was getting mulched. That's why I was in line and they were dumping on me.
Okay.
Anyway, two things. For the person in Corpus or wherever they are outside of San Antonio area who can't get the 20% vinegar, you can always ask your local HEB who carries the Medina product vinegar to get you a case or two. Granted, you got to buy the 4 gallons at a time, that helps. And I've had to do that in the past at another place I have.
Well, some stores will do it. Some stores are a little bit more hard-headed about it, but good place to try.
Yep, for the person in Corpus or wherever, that's always a good thing. They can also get you some of the other stuff if you're willing. Get together with some friends and neighbors if they're willing to do it and do it that way too. Number two, you said it was too late to plant big tomatoes. What if they're the big, strawny, long ones that are still sort of in some of the places? We could plant them sideways, can't we, and get them up and going?
You can certainly do that, but don't expect a lot of fruit until fall.
Okay.
Because, you know, the big fruited tomatoes don't set fruit. They'll grow great. They'll bloom great. They won't until the nights cool off again. You'll be looking at a lot of plant. And nothing wrong with that. If you want to plant them, just don't expect, production in June, July, and August. The cherry tomatoes don't pay any attention to nighttime temperatures. And most people want to see fruit a little bit more quickly. I'm all in favor of planting more big tomatoes in about July to have a bumper crop in the fall. But if you're willing to work to get them through the summer months, you can certainly plant them now, but you're just not going to get much fruit until we go back to, when you plant the plants, even if they're a little big, probably going to be 45 days before they're going to be blooming. And by that time, we're quite likely to be in pretty warm nights. So plant away if you like, but just don't expect a lot of production till fall. Plant your cherries, and they don't pay any attention to nighttime temperature, so they go on producing all summer long.
Right. No, I love it. It's going to be slightly warm 45 days from now. We're in Texas, and I love to move here and go, it's hot! And I go, what do you expect? We're in Texas.
That's exactly right. Exactly
Thank
right.
Thank you, sir.
You're welcome, Chris. And let's see here. Yeah, let me get a quick break in here, and then we will talk to Mark and Robert and move right through the list. I get to add my 2 cents worth about what a great water softener Kinetico is. It's a water softener. Gosh, I got one on Brad Messer's advice probably 20 years or so ago. And I truly agree that it is the best water softener in the industry, and it is the last water softener you will ever own. But the things that make it great are important, too. Number one, it doesn't run on electricity. It runs on the kinetic energy of the water, and that means you don't have to worry about lightning strikes or power surges or power outages. Number two, it doesn't recharge on a preset schedule. That wastes salt. That wastes water. And it just doesn't happen with the Kinetico system because Kinetico doesn't recharge until the rosin needs to be recharged. You're never going to run out of soft water because it is a twin tank system, but it's the most efficient. In fact, the water softener industry voted it the most efficient water softener out there. and they believe in it so much they'll let you try it for 90 days before you owe them a penny, if you like. And like you heard, the number to dial is, well, it's either 656-PURE, 210-656-PURE, or if you'd rather look them up on the Internet, it's KineticoSA.com.
South Texas Gardening with Bob Webster is on the air. News Talk 550 KTSA and FM 107.1.
All right, let's get back to gardening. Looks like we are going to talk to Mark and Robert, Steve and Jan. Mark is next in line. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning, Bob.
Good morning, sir.
Well, it's been a busy year. I have all of the vegetables covered for severe weather or hail.
But well,
it's a lot of work. It's a lot of work.
The more you do, the less likely it is to happen. That's been my experience, and we do the same thing.
Right. I've probably covered them 6 or 8 times, and we haven't even gotten more than a tenth of rain out of all of that.
I know. It's pretty frustrating.
It's dry. So right now the hail covers are on, and with the warm weather and the 2-week forecast was clear, you know, above 50. Well, they dropped the forecast Sunday night, 8 degrees. And now I put away all of the cold stuff.
Well, who knows?
So here's the, the question is, what things I need to keep above, like, I try to keep tomatoes above 45 because what we've seen is that can permanently affect them. But mm-hmm. I've got small corn and small beans up. Do you think 40 degrees is going to affect those?
Depends on whether we get frost. 40 degrees won't hurt them, but when we get down into the upper 30s, frost is always a possibility, and frost will injure or kill all the things you just mentioned. So just all depends on whether it's going to be a dry, chilly period or whether there's going to be enough humidity in the air to get frost to form, and that's the deciding factor.
So how humid does it need to be? Do you have any idea? Or if I look at the forecast, can I predict maybe?
Well, it all gets down to what they call the dew point. If it gets down to the point that dew would form, then frost can certainly form. And I don't fully understand how they calculate the dew point, but that's the critical level.
And does wind affect that, where you can get frost?
The windier it is, the less likely it is to have frost.
Okay, because it looks like the wind may blow, so we wouldn't get that big drop that we get when it gets calm. Yeah, okay.
We can always find lots of things to be optimistic about, but what is it somebody once said about Murphy's Law? Said Murphy was an optimist, so yeah. we'll see, but it's just typical Texas. You know, we've had freezes in April. I don't think we've ever had one quite this late, but I remember a couple of freezes back around the 10th, so... chances are that you'll be fine, but no guarantees.
This is our full-time job, so I've got the time, so I've been covering a lot. Mm-hmm. A lot.
Yes, sir.
So are you getting vetch everywhere now?
Oh, yeah. Vetch is growing like mad, and along with burr clover, which with a young dog with very thick fur, it's a bit of grooming on a daily basis, but vetch is growing like mad. Oxalis is growing like mad, and unfortunately the burr clover is as well, but all those things are good for the soil, it's a good thing.
It looks like sparegrass is big too. Yeah,
I just can't believe how much of that is showing up, and that is not so good.
Right. Okay, thanks, Bob.
You're sure welcome, Mark. You too. Thank you. Next in line is Robert. Good morning, Robert.
Good morning, Bob. Got a few questions for you. I didn't get to finish last time I was with you, but hoping I'll get everything in today.
Very good.
I bought some roses in East Texas. I was visiting my daughter up there.
Uh-huh.
And one of them, they didn't have no, it was a nursery, but it was kind of mom and pop one. And I bought a peach drift roses. You know, they're kind of small, different mm-hmm. colors. And I bought them in a 3-gallon pots, and I transfer them over to a 5-gallon, okay? And I put some potting mix and compost. Is that would that work for them?
It should work fine. Now, in general, don't bring roses from that part of Texas and over and plant them here and expect them to do well. You're okay with your drift roses because they are grown from cuttings rather than being grafted. But in East Texas, Tyler, Lindale, all those places over there, they use a different rootstock. They use a different rootstock that does not do well in here. But your drift roses, like your knockouts, are not grafted, so they're on their own roots. So it's okay to plant those over here. But in general, be careful about buying roses in East Texas because they use a different rootstock that does very well over there, that does very poorly here. But again, if the roses are cutting grown, like the antique roses, like the drifts, like the knockouts, then you're okay.
Let me ask you another question. There's one that that I bought that it's a pretty good size one, and it buds red, right? Then it turns into kind of like a lavender color, and it's about four inches in diameter.
Okay.
It's real pretty color. What causes that? You know, when I got it home, I said, hey, what's this turn red? And then it got to that kind of lavender color, real nice, color.
Well, some roses change color over a 2 or 3 day period. I'm not familiar with that variety, but there are things like your so-called mutabilis or butterfly rose that are totally different colors on day one, day two, and day three after the buds open. So that just depends on the variety, but it's not at all unusual to have them that will change color over a period of time.
And the other thing I like to ask you, I put those on my front of the house, which it gets a very, very hot sun in the afternoon, What do you think about that?
As long as you can keep them watered, as long as you're in relatively good soil, the more sun you get, the more flowers you will get. So it should be just fine, but do watch your watering carefully. Be sure that when you water very thoroughly, and especially on knockout roses and drift roses, they do not do well if they get too dry.
Okay, real good. Okay, the other thing that I want to ask you, I got a pretty well mature crepe myrtle in my front of the house, and I'm getting a bunch of these things growing from the bottom part, real green, of course, because I fertilized it, was growing green. Do you think I should cut those off?
That's up to you. Crepe myrtles in nature grow as a big bush, not as a tree. So if you want a bushy growth of crepe myrtles, leave them alone. If you want your crepe myrtle to be more tree-like, then you should cut them off.
Cut them off. Yeah, that's what I'm thinking about doing. And one more other thing. I went and visited that one place that you mentioned at Blanco Mulch to get some compost. And I talked to the lady extensively. Her name is Donna, real nice lady. And she gave me a handout. And the compost that she has there also has molasses. Have you ever heard of that?
Oh, yeah. Molasses is a great thing to add a little bit to. It speeds up the microbial activity. And that's one of the things you're really looking for. With compost, there's lots of good microbes in it, and the molasses is a very good thing to have added. They apparently make pretty good quality. I didn't really know much about them until a little while back, and a couple of friends gone out and came back and gave me a very glowing report. I haven't had time to stop in yet. I've driven by a couple of times, but it was...
You told me that it wasn't you that stopped by. It was a couple of your friends or something like that.
Yeah.
But anyway, let me ask you a question. Another thing that came up, and I asked her, but she didn't have an answer for it. I've known that lady for about 7 years, when she first started the business. But, is there an organization or association that goes in and certifies that it's good compost?
No.
I heard there's only five companies here in San Antonio. Have you ever heard of that, Bob?
No, there is no organization. There is a state organization that certifies, or actually a national organization that certifies things as organic or non-organic. There's a different organization that certifies things as being free of GMOs, but there's organization that rates the quality.
Okay, but it can't tell you if it has a GMO stuff and all that. You know,
if it'll either have a little butterfly on it and it will say non-GMO product or non-GMO project, or it will say USDA certified organic. Mm-hmm. Both of those will, make sure that it doesn't have the things you don't want in there.
Yeah, and she had very, very good. When she was loading it, steam was coming out, so I said, it must be pretty fresh. But it was really, really nice, a good place to get your stuff. Plus, I'm just going to put this out. She gives you a military discount. With all these combat vets around this area, we enjoy that. Yeah,
that's a good thing, and appreciate you giving me the information. You get out and have a wonderful weekend.
Okay, thank you very much, Bob. Thank you for
your answer. You're sure welcome. Okay. Thank you. Okay. All right, let's see here. Yeah, I guess we better break in here, Jimmy. Go ahead and run those recorders, and we'll be back with some more phone calls.
South Texas Gardening with Bob Webster. News Talk 550 KTSA and FM 107.1.
All right, back to gardening and back to the phone calls. Steve is up next, and it'll be Jan. Good morning, Steve.
Morning, Bob. Got a bluebonnet seed question for you.
Okay.
We have a kind of a raised, more or less circular bed with a dwarf crepe myrtle. Mm-hmm. And the bluebonnets are really starting to take over that bed this year. They went crazy. And there's like
such a problem to have.
200 seed pods or whatever. Anyway, wife's not really excited about that spreading and everything because it's right next to a walkway and she doesn't like snakes hiding in there.
Okay.
So rather than pick off all of those seed pods and move them to another area where we have clear that we want them, can we just pull those plants out, put them on the ground there and let those seeds pop open right there naturally?
If you wait until the seed pod is mature, which means that it will no longer be green, if it's fairly yellowed, then it probably has mature seed inside. If it's brown, then it definitely would be fine to do that. But you have to be sure the seed is mature. If you'll get down or if you'll pick off a little deal and kind of shake it, if the seed seems to be loose inside of the bean, then that's definitely mature seed.
Okay, good. Yeah, some of them are actually starting to pop open already. Mm-hmm. But there's a variety. Okay, well, we'll do that. But I thought that was a good idea, but I thought I'd check with you. Because know that Floret is just annual. That's not going to come back. All of them will come back from seed next year.
Right. But that's an excellent idea. People, I wish everybody would do it that way. And I wish the state would learn not to mow at the inappropriate time so that we'd go back to having the wildflowers along the road, or the counties are some of the ones that have been worse about doing it at the wrong time. But you're doing it at the right time, so that'll be a good thing. And keep both, it'll maintain marital bliss, shall we say.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's great. Thank you, Bob. Sure appreciate it.
Always a pleasure, Steve. Thank you. And Jan is next in line. Good morning, Jan.
Good morning, Bob.
Good morning.
I'm calling about grass, as like some people are.
Like most people are.
Yeah. Have you heard anything about or know anything about those St. Augustines that have blue in their name?
No, like that would be a new one on me. I don't.
Yeah, Seville and a Mercedes, and some of them, if you look it up online, they'll say they're heat tolerant and they're cold tolerant. And I'm just not sure about, off the main drag of grass, if it'll be.
Yeah, well, Seville is one that's been around for quite a while, and it's reasonably good. I'm still a big fan. If it's a really sunny area, I think Floritam is by far the most sun-tolerant and drought-tolerant. It's the one that was developed between A&M and the University of Florida. And it's resistance to chinch bugs, and that's not a big issue in our area, but it is by far the most heat and drought-tolerant. I like Palmetto and Del Mar is probably the two most shade-tolerant varieties. If there was a variety I would tell you to stay away from, it's Raleigh, which seems to be just extra susceptible to brown patch disease. But I know they've come out with some new ones, and I just hate to talk about anything that I haven't had personal experience with.
Right. Okay. I just want to tell you, like, my celebrity tomato plant has gone crazy.
It's looking like a
5 blooms on it and one tomato.
Well, tomatoes are wind pollinated, and the nights are getting warm enough now that they should set lots of fruit, but they're not so, when it gets too hot, nights get too warm, they won't set as much. But we've had cool enough nights that unless you're in just a little heat pocket, the plants are doing so well. It's just temperatures have to be just right to set fruit, but I think we're going to be there over the next probably 3 to 5 weeks. Is going to be just an ideal time for production. Keeping your plants as healthy as you have, you're going to have a lot to look forward to.
Yeah, so it's a good time to plant some grass now?
A good time to plant what now?
Grass now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, still a real good time. Just be absolutely certain that you're dealing with a company that will roll the grass after they plant it. I've already had a couple of horror stories this morning from, people that got grass planted. They didn't roll it. Now half of it's dead. So just, don't pay them until they have rolled it. I'll put it that way.
I think we're going to work on doing some plugs.
Mm-hmm. That's fine, too. And with plugs, you can basically just, give it a good stomp. But what you're trying to do, you're not trying to level things at all. You're just trying to take out any air pockets between the plug or the piece of sod and the soil underneath. That's what's going to help it get off to the fastest start.
Yeah. My neighbor got a bid on just doing his front yard from somebody, and they wanted $25,000. That would not work.
That wouldn't be in my budget, I'll certainly tell you that.
That's above my pay grade.
Yep.
Okay,
again, back in the days when I actually planted a lot of grass, worked for a nursery, and we grew a lot of our own grass, and we would take the squares and cut them up in little 2-inch squares, and it was a three-man job. One person cut the grass into small squares. The second one walked along with a grubbing hoe, gouging out a little bit of the soil. Third guy threw the piece of sod down and stomped on it, and couldn't plant it nearly as quickly, but given a year to grow, it's created some of those beautiful yards anywhere. So you guys can do it, and even if you have to go out and buy the sod, so long as you don't leave it stacked, you can do it for like a tenth the cost because you're spreading it out that much.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you for your help today.
Always a pleasure. You get out and enjoy a beautiful weekend.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Jan. Bye. All right, Jimmy, let's get our bottom of the hour, our last break of the show done, and we'll be back with time for just a few more phone calls.
We already finished all the commercials. I'm sorry.
Okay, so we can just go right on with phone calls. Well, it looks like next in line is going to be Joe, and then it will be Debbie. Good morning, Joe.
Hello?
Hi, Joe, are you there? Yeah, good morning, sir.
I got a question on Palmera, the Hawaiian bush.
Yeah, Plumeria.
Yeah, and the one we have is getting a little bit too big. I can't keep it in my greenhouse when the winter comes.
Okay.
What would be the best time to start cutting them off and rerouting them?
You can pretty much do it any time. I would probably wait till late summer to do it just so you can enjoy the flowering. You could do it right now, but again, you're destroying, your longest blooming season, so I would probably think about doing it along about September or so. That'll be a good time. You can still root cuttings and yet get your plants down to a protectable size.
Okay, wouldn't that be a little late to try to get them restarted?
No. No, if September were typically, very warm, you could actually even do it a little later if you had a propagating mat, but just rooting them, you cut them, you let them callus for 2 or 3 days, and then put them in soil, and September's still a pretty hot month. I mean, you could do it July or August if you wanted to, but September can still be uncomfortably warm, but the plumerias seem to think that that's just an ideal time to grow, and you'll be fine to do it that late.
Okay, I got one more question. We got a couple lemon trees. but it's full of buds, but it doesn't seem to be shooting much leaves. Will it shoot out more leaves once the buds turn into lemons?
Yeah, it most definitely will. Most lemon trees retain their foliage through the winter months. It probably got a little dry at some point, or it may have gotten a little bit of frost damage, but no, it will it'll produce flowers. It'll probably set a bunch of lemons, and then you should have lots of good new foliage. Do your part. Go ahead and, you know, fertilize. Has to grow or any good liquid fertilizer. And watch your watering. Water it very, very thoroughly when you water, but let the soil get dry about a knuckle deep before you water it again. And you should have a good season for lemons.
Okay, what about the granular that they use for the citrus?
If you have them planted in the ground, I think it's a great thing to do. In a pot, you'll get much better results and much faster results with the liquid.
Okay. Something like that, Texas tea?
And that'll be fine. Again, that's it's good in the ground, but if you have them in pots, I'd recommend, I think Espoma makes a product you could dissolve in water, but I like the Medina products, either the Has to Grow plant or the one they call their liquid fish blend. Those are what I would use.
Okay, I have some Medina. Has to Grow.
Yeah, that'd be great. Not Has to Grow lawn, but Has to Grow plant. Has to Grow lawn is great on grass, but it's not designed for tomatoes or lemons.
Well, no, I got the one with the fruits and that on it.
Yeah, if it says Has to Grow plant, that's one of the best fertilizers you'll ever find.
Okay, I appreciate your help.
Well, you're more than welcome. I appreciate the call this morning. Thank you. Debbie's next, and we'll probably have time for a couple more calls out of that. You know the number, 210-599-5555. Good morning, Debbie.
Good morning, Bob.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for what you do. Came by the store yesterday and got some Medina organic fertilizer and left a little note for you. And so I'm off and running like a herd of turtles this morning, and I wanted to ask, would it be best if I mowed my grass before I put the fertilizer down with upcoming rain this afternoon, or does it matter?
I like your optimism. No, it makes no difference whatsoever. It makes no difference whatsoever. You know,
go ahead.
The synthetic nitrogen fertilizers, you certainly wouldn't want to put them out after the foliage is wet, because it will tend to, people call it burning. In truth, it's just dehydrating. But the organic products like that, you can put it on before the rain, after the rain, or during the rain. You can do it before you mow or after you mow. It really makes no difference whatsoever.
All right. So that gives me options for breakfast time or not. That's awesome. Great. And then also, too, the cornmeal tea. I did get the cornmeal from you for these incredible oak trees out here. I feel better just doing it, and I talk to the trees, so I think they're better for it.
and you probably are, too.
Yes, I am.
As they say, gardening is cheaper than therapy, and you get tomatoes.
Exactly, and everything else. So thank you again for what you do.
Well, it's my great pleasure, and I appreciate you listening and calling. You get out and have a wonderful weekend, and I hope your optimism about the rain pays off.
Oh, yes. I'll do a little radiance, too, of course. Have a great day.
You too, Debbie. Thanks so much for the call. All right, we'll probably finish up with Ron and then Gail. Good morning, Ron.
Good morning, Bob. Hey, I'm having a terrible time over the last 3 years. I probably should have called you long before now, but getting a decent crop of radishes. Mm-hmm. I've started them it's probably been over a month ago. I've got huge tops on them, and virtually no bulb or root, whatever you want to call it, on the bottom. And I've used nothing but the organic fertilizers. In this case, it's a 222 that I've been using. Mm-hmm. I used azomite, cornmeal. Am I missing something that would be of benefit to me? Or I just don't want to just grow tops without bulbs.
I think you're not thinning them out enough. If they're to the point that the plants basically are touching, they're too close together, and that's when you get all top and no radish. I mean, you probably have to, of all the radishes that sprout, you probably have to pull up, and I don't recommend throwing away. I recommend eating the little plants, foliage and all, but you really, really need to thin them out a whole lot. That goes for beets. That goes for carrots. But when I see, unless it's just a specific variety that's being grown more for the foliage than for the root, what you're describing is almost always simply that the plants haven't been thinned out so they're where they're far enough apart.
Okay. What are the amendments that I mentioned? Is there anything in addition to what I'm doing that I should be doing?
Or no, and the fact that you're getting beautiful tops tells you that you're fertilizing and watering just fine. But, no, I think you're adding everything you need to add. But, I mean, you need to thin these out where these little plants, depending on the variety of radish, are 2 or 3 inches apart in the soil. And you need to do it while they're still fairly young. If you wait till they're up pretty good size, then it's a little late to start making much of a big bulb. But now, when they have their first true leaves, you know, the first leaves comes out are the cotyledons or the seed leaves. When the radishes have their first true leaves showing, that's the time to go through and thin.
Okay. Well, I'll do that. Thank you, Bob.
You're more than welcome. Thank you for the call. I appreciate it. All right. Next in line is Gail. Good morning, Gail.
Good morning, Bob.
Good morning.
I have a backyard that is nothing but rock. I had rocks brought in several years ago. And all of a sudden, on one side of the yard, I have nothing but weeds. And I know you've got a good weed killer, but I don't have it written down.
Okay.
Is it possible just to spray the whole area? Because I don't want anything that bothers cats. The neighbor's cats come over here.
Sure. You certainly can, but the weed killer that we use is non-selective. It's we like using it before the grass really gets started in the spring, because if you get it, you know, on your grass, now it's not going to kill St. Augustine or Bermuda. It's going to burn the top back.
I have no grass there. No grass.
Okay. Then go for it. Yeah. Get some strong vinegar. And the recipe is, you know, a gallon of vinegar, 2 ounces or 2 jiggers, if you prefer, of orange oil.
Orange oil, okay.
And then just a little splash of dish soap and maybe a tablespoon of molasses if you want to, you know, get the absolute maximum results. You'll kill a lot of it with nothing but vinegar, but the orange oil and then just a little bit of dish soap and molasses seems to make it work even better.
Great. I hope it takes care of it. I'm sure it will, but I'm on my way out. I'm going to go out and pull weeds for a while today.
That's fine, and, you know, you would like this, your spray, to stay on the plants for 30 minutes before it gets washed off. Just, you know, watch the clouds. I've given up believing in weathermen a long time ago, but they're saying 100% chance of rain, and I will believe it when I see it. But you don't want the clouds to open up just as you get through spraying. You'd like for it to stay on the weeds. At 30 minutes, that's going to give you plenty of time, so you're probably okay to go ahead and do it any time. But to watch the weather and just hope for a really, really good rain, but not until it's been on the weeds for a few minutes. And if it looks like rain is imminent, let the rain come and then spray it tomorrow.
And then spray. Okay, yeah. I appreciate it, and thank you very much.
Well, you are certainly welcome. Thank you for the call. You too. Mm-hmm. Goodbye. All right, well, don't have anybody else waiting right now, do I, Jimmy?
No, sir.
Okay, well, let's just go over a few things that it would be good to do today. Again, if you're thinking of putting out compost, still in that window. We're still into some pretty cool weather. In fact, the daytime highs the next couple of days are not going to get out of the 70s and are not supposed to get out of the 70s. And that's pretty much ideal weather for top dressing with compost. And I know of no single thing that will help grass, especially grass that's been a little bit stressed by last summer's heat and drought. Just a thin top dressing, about 1/2 inch of compost, will really, really help that grass recover. If you haven't fertilized within the past 90 days, by all means, whether you use Medina or Maestro Grow or nature's creation. All of them make good organic fertilizers, and it would be a great day to put it out. Remember that with organic products, it's okay if the grass is wet. If we get that rain, don't ever do that with your synthetic fertilizers. Those things stick to wet grass and will absolutely burn the heck out of things. Anything organic, just, you know, go get it out there, and hopefully we'll get a good rain afterwards and water things in well. Other things, golly, it's if you have any yellowing, azomite is a great product that you can use on grass, on flowers, on shrubs, anything that has a tendency to yellow. Azomite's just absolutely magical as far as how it greens things up and provides things all the micronutrients they need to grow. And again, you can put it out wet or dry, but it would be a good thing to go ahead and put on any areas where things are just not coming back as green as you wish they would. I'm going to say that it's warm enough now, the soil is warmed up enough in the vegetable garden, you can go ahead and plant just about anything, including okra, which is very much a hot weather plant. In the flower garden, I think we're probably okay to start planting periwinkles now. That's one thing we don't plant until the soil and the weather is pretty warm, because a lot of the older varieties, at least, are susceptible to Phytophthora wilt, which is a disease that just kills hundreds of thousands of plants every year when people plant the periwinkles too early. But I think we're warm enough now that you can probably go ahead and plant. Other things, golly, if you haven't looked at things like the Taurinia is beautiful. Angelonia is starting to be in the nurseries now. Pentas, all these things are sun-loving. In the shade, you've got a wide selection of begonias these days. Lots of impatiens. Also things, if you're looking for perennials, things like the Salvia coccinea, which is a little one that freezes down but comes back and reseeds fairly freely. That comes both in red, pink, or in all three colors, red, pink, and white, and certainly a fine time to put those things out. Starting to see a bit more of the Strobilanthus or Persian shield show up in the nurseries, another great one for shade. And, of course, Coleus is a good plant for shade. Caladiums, the soil is a little cool to be planting the bulbs. I'd probably hold off a week or two before planting caladium bulbs. But if you get the little plants that are already up and growing, get them in 4-inch pots or 6-inch pots, certainly a great time to put those things in the ground. And just be sure you're choosing the right varieties. And coleus and caladiums both, there are some varieties that will tolerate the full hot sun, others which are intended strictly for shade. So, again, deal with a good nursery. Make your selections carefully. And don't rely on the box stores or the grocery stores, things like that. They just want to put it out and sell it. And don't rely on the tags, because growers tend to want to use a tag that will apply over a very large area. You want advice that is specifically good for South Texas. If you want to look on the Internet, look at dirtdoctor.com. That's Howard Garrett's website out of Dallas. And virtually all the information on there is certainly going to be applicable to San Antonio. Of course, I hope you go to a good nursery, and we've got several of them here in San Antonio where the people can help you make your selections. But, you know, do yourself a favor and look very carefully, very critically at the beds, and see how much sunlight they receive. It's so funny. We oftentimes get couples in here, and I'll ask them how much sun it gets, and the husband and the wife disagree totally on how much sun it gets. So figure it out in advance so that folks can help you choose the plants that are going to grow best, you know, in the amount of light that you have. Still lots of perennials to set out. Golly, some of the different salvias are beautiful. Actually saw a whole new color of one of the upright blue salvias that's more of a violet color, a new one called Chill or Chili. If you're looking for different things, just get out above all and enjoy. Howard Garrett will be back with us again next week for our little 8 o'clock interview. Right now it's time for Martin Bamba here on KTSA Radio, San Antonio, Texas.